All right, good evening, everybody. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, September 7th, 2015. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern to midnight. If you are listening over another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call and number is 605-562-3140. Participant code is 385-698. Radio hosts are invited into the queue if they have any questions or comments. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send questions to questions, plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can see their banners on the right-hand side of our site, and all the proceeds go to support National Liberty Alliance effort to save America. Also, please support National Liberty Alliance by donating $5 or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right. And now first, we'll take a look into God's Word. Tonight, we're going to be looking into Proverbs chapter 13, verses 1 through 14. So that's Proverbs 13, verses 1 through 14. A wise son heareth his father's instructions, but a scorner heareth not rebuke. A man shall eat good by the fruit of his mouth, but the soul of the transgressors shall eat violence. He that keepeth his mouth keepeth his life, but he that openeth wide his lips shall have destruction. The soul of the sluggard desireth and hath nothing, but the soul of the diligent shall be made fat. A righteous man hateth lying, but a wicked man is loathsome and come to shame. Righteousness keepeth him that is upright in the way, but wickedness overthroweth the sinners. There is that maketh himself rich, yet hath nothing. There is that maketh himself poor, yet hath great riches. The ransom of a man's life are his riches, but the poor heareth not rebuke. The light of the righteous rejoiceth, but the lamp of the wicked shall be put out. Only by pride cometh contention, but with the well-advised is wisdom. Wealth gotteth by vanity shall be diminished, but he that gathereth by labor shall increase. Hope deferred maketh the heart sick, but when the desire cometh, it is a tree of life. Whoso despiseth the word shall be destroyed, but he that feareth the commandments shall be rewarded. The law of the wise is a fountain of life, to depart from the snares of death. Okay, that was Proverbs 13, verses 1 through 14. Okay, tonight's topic is going to be on the county sheriff. We have a new page. Well, to get to this page, you can go to powerofthecountysheriff.com. That's powerofthecountysheriff.com. One more time, powerofthecountysheriff.com. That's the page which we're going to be looking at today. We picked up two URLs, one is .com and one is .net, called Power of the County Sheriff. And it points to a page on our website that we have a link on the top to, but it's not in its proper place. We just placed it there for right now under the committees. It's called the County Sheriff. You can get there that way also. But that's the page that these two URLs point to. We need to get a real good campaign going. It's time to really, really swamp the sheriff with common law, with the Constitution, with his duties and his authorities. And so we have to get the message out to the sheriffs. You know, the sheriffs, of course, are probably bombarded by a lot of the prosecutors and judges and all kinds of people, other politicians putting their arms around them saying, oh, those guys are crazy, you know, with National Liberty Alliance or the grand juries, the unified grand juries and so on and so forth. But all we have to do is get them to look at our paperwork. All we have to do is get them to look at our site, look at our words, look at what we're talking about. that we're talking about the words of our founding fathers, that we're actually quoting the United States Supreme Court, and we're upholding the law, not downgrading the law, but upholding the law. And the law is defined, of course, in the U.S. Constitution under Article 6, second paragraph. And that is the law defined. The Bill of Rights, of course, is the capstone of our Constitution, is indeed part of the Constitution. For those who don't know, there were, I believe it was seven states, I got to think about this a minute, I think it was seven states who refused to sign the Constitution unless they agreed that a Bill of Rights would be added, and of course they agreed to that, and a Bill of Rights was added. And ultimately it was really the brainchild of Jefferson, although others were involved, of course, and he didn't necessarily take direct credit, but it was him who said that a Bill of Rights is required and necessary. It was the Anti-Federalists that realized that the Constitution without a capstone Bill of Rights could be interpreted in many, many different ways, and it would be a lot easier for the enemy to get their foot into the door. Of course, they did get their foot into our door, of course, by really just dumbing us down. They've told us how bright we are, and we're born in such a great time, and we've got all these things. We have so much knowledge, and we're so bright, and more this, that, or the other thing, and yet we are probably the dumbest people on the face of the earth, because what is going on in America, and we don't even realize it. We're focused in on things and not the values of life. And so that doesn't make us too bright. But again, they've done this to us. They've been working on our minds since we were born. And we, many of us, especially people coming here to National Liberty Alliance and other liberty groups, are waking up to the reality of things and beginning to become educated. I don't think enough people are becoming educated, and I mean really educated, educated in the common law, the process and procedure of the court, the necessities of life. To control your life, you need to have these things and know these things. It should be taught in grammar school. As a matter of fact, eighth grade level is sufficient, and if you go back 100 years ago and see the test, we've sent them around before. We do have one up online, probably under the Juris page, but a Juris tab. But the eighth grade test back 100 years ago was equal to a college education and even better because they knew things that a lot of people in college don't know. At least they understood what the Revolutionary War was and the difference between that and the Civil War. People in college today, they're not even aware of it. And that's a very unfortunate thing, and it's done on purpose, again. You know, you got to keep the slaves dumb, otherwise you won't be able to control them. But anyway, many of us are starting to come above this, and that is, of course, the purpose of National Liberty Alliance, to facilitate an education and to teach people how to stand up on their own and take control within their counties by becoming administrators for the grand jury and also the trial jury, and therefore also the investigative bodies. Learning also the process and procedures of the court, how to write papers, learning civics, American history, who our founding fathers really were, and so on. And so this is what we have to continue doing. But we have to educate our sheriffs. Our sheriffs just don't know. They just don't understand. And we have to get the word out to them. So we want to move on a huge campaign. We've got thousands of members, and we want to make use of those thousands of members, and we want to really push forward our campaign to educate our sheriff. We've been sending things, and they were kind of long-winded. It needed to be. We had to build the foundation. We've sent out 10 different papers to all elected officials, and the county sheriff, of course, was part of that focus. We have fax machines working. They've been a little idle over the weekend, but they'll be turned back on probably tomorrow. We're going to be pushing out, as a matter of fact, a paper we're going to be looking at today. And it's a three-page paper, 12 font, 1 inches around the edge, so it's not all that long. It's not all that much. But hopefully it's going to entice the sheriff to come to powerofthecountysheriff.com and get him his interest or her interest into looking into the real law, the Constitution for the United States of America. And we need them to understand their duty. So what we're going to do is we're going to read through this paper. This is the first time I'm reading it out loud. When I read it out loud, that's when I find errors and different things of that nature. So we may be finding some errors as we go through. This paper is posted at powerofthegrandjury.com. Please write that website down. Again, you'll find it points to our website on a page for sheriffs on National Liberty Alliance. But we wanted to get that out with that URL to get the message out. We're looking to empower them. They need to have power. They need to understand their power and understand the duty that they have. And the existence of America tomorrow may very well depend on them becoming knowledgeable and realizing what their duties truly are, because I've discovered that they just don't know. I know there are a few out there, but they are very few and far and in between. They are lost. They're not sure how to go about things. They don't know how to get an indictment through without going through, of course, the prosecutor. They think they have to talk to the prosecutor about every case that they get involved with. Well, then they might as well just give up their jobs and give it to the prosecutor. Why do we need a sheriff then? If he's the guy that's going to decide what a constitutional problem is or not. And we know he is a bar member working with another bar member called the judge. And they're working together, and they are the foxes in charge of the hen house. They decide who's going to get indicted and who's not, and certainly they're not going to indict each other. So they have this thing going on. We call it RICO. And there's a lot of problems. And the sheriffs are blind to this. The bailiffs are sheriffs, by the way. They're supposed to be working for the sheriff's department. It is the sheriff is the bailiff of the court. And, of course, he has deputies. And I don't know whether they might put a patch on him, call him bailiff. I guess they could. But they really should leave the deputy patch on, and definitely they should be controlled by the sheriff. Same thing with, but I know in some places it's not necessarily the case. We have to fix that. We don't care about the town courts. We don't care about the city courts. We don't care about the village courts. We don't care about those courts because they're not courts of record, and they're all corporation courts. All of the police departments working for those agencies are working to earn money for the government or for the corporation, which we think is the government, but it's the corporation. And so it's all about applying the code against the people. But the sheriff, he is supposed to be applying the Constitution on our servants. He's supposed to be looking for constitutional violations on the people. And when he finds someone that has become a victim of these tyrants, it is his duty to make an arrest and get a grand jury indictment. Whether he wants to do that first or second, that's his business. Generally, you know, if he's going to go after a judge or after a prosecutor or some other elected servant, he should go for the indictment first and then go put the cuffs on him and arrest him. But anyway, we got to get the message out to them. Now, we've been working at this for a while. Again, we have primed the pumps to some degree. We have sent them 10 papers. It's a lot to read. Some of these papers were 19 pages long. I'm sure many or some sheriffs have read these things and are starting to become a little enlightened. But many have not because they have been poisoned by other servants. But this short paper hopefully will catch their attention. And we're going to ask everybody to, not right now, because we're going to make some corrections. We have not had this paper actually run through for punctuation and maybe changes of a few words here or there or whatever errors that we might pick up tonight when we look at this thing. So wait until we actually put the word out that it's going forward. We'll send an email out when it's happening. And that's when you want to go up and download the papers and get a copy to your sheriff. Get a hold of your sheriff. Ask him, does he know the Constitution? Is he obeying the Constitution? Or is he giving up his job to someone else to run it? Because, hey, you know, how many elected officials have the sheriffs arrested? I mean, after all, that's their job, is to be looking, being on the lookout for servants, quote-unquote, violating their unalienable rights. I mean, if he wants to make some arrests, all he's got to do is sit in court all day, and he'll be making arrests all day long. Every judge they send in, they'll be taking them out in cuffs because they do this all day long. Go into the town courts, the village courts. But they don't know. They don't see. They don't understand. They're blind to it. They're not seeing it. And so it's our job to get the message out to them. It's our founding fathers and the United States Supreme Court and the Constitution and all the great works that are put together, the Magna Carta. It's their job to enlighten them. But we are to get the message to them. We're to lead them to the waterhole. Let's look at this paper. Up at the top right side of the paper, right under the power of the county sheriff on the page I sent to you again, powerofthecountysheriff.com. And on the page, you'll see open letter to sheriff, 090715. Okay, so if you click on that, that paper will open, and that's what we're going to be reading tonight. And then we're going to look a little bit at this page. I may have to be making corrections as we read it. The paper is from We the People. We purposely did not put National Liberty. Well, we haven't been sending out National Liberty Alliance anyway. We purposely have not been put. Did not put the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury on this because we want to get them to the website. And when they see that, some of them may have been poisoned so bad that they just throw it away. So we don't know what the numbers are on that. And we got to believe that the sheriffs who are becoming enlightened are enlightening other sheriffs. We have 3,143, approximately, sheriffs in the United States, and they all need to be enlightened. Okay, this is addressed from We the People, powerofthecountysheriff.com, to County Sheriff, all 3,143 counties. We are copying all elected servants. You can read to the list there. And in reference is to an open letter to the county sheriff. So we're not only going to send this open letter to the sheriff, we're sending it out to all 12,500 plus elected individuals across the United States, both on the state and federal level. All of the individuals that are listed here, senators, governors, federal special agents in charge, the assemblymen, state assemblymen, councilmen, but congressmen and senators, U.S. senators, so on. So we're going to send it out to all of them. And the reason being, it should shake them up a little bit because we're getting our message out to the sheriff to do his duty and to look out for crime amongst the elected individuals. Again, of course, the sheriff is to go out on calls. Robbed or if a murder takes place or things of that nature, it's the sheriff that should be out on that, by the way. But in any event, he should, of course, be going out on those kind of calls, but he shouldn't be out there giving out tickets in the streets. He should be more focused in on what's going on in his jail, making sure that due process has taken place and everyone that has in his custody. And if they haven't, he better look for a way to set them free because now he's become part of the conspiracy. And he needs to be knowing what's going on in that jail. He's responsible for what happens in that jail. He is the jailer. He's also the supreme officer of the court. Total control. He's the constitutional officer. He's supposed to make sure that the Constitution is being applied in the court, and he doesn't know that that's his job, and he doesn't understand that. We have to get that message to him. He's also, of course, the chief administrator of the county, in charge of law, and we're looking particularly, of course, at common law, which is, again, the Constitution. Okay, so we open a letter to the county sheriff. Dear sheriff, do you know your constitutional duties? Do you understand that the county sheriff is a constitutional officer elected by the people, bound by oath as guardian of the people's unalienable rights, secured by the Constitution? Do you know the Constitution is the law of the land? Do you know that if the sheriff is ignorant to the Constitution, which is common law, it would stand to reason that he is in violation of his oath, not comprehending when judges and other servants violate the law of the land, and thereby technically guilty of treason? Do you know that the duties, responsibilities, and authorities of the sheriffs cannot be diminished by those in the legislature, court, and state constitutions? Do you know that being a constitutional law enforcer means you are to be looking for and understand when elected, appointed, or hired servants violate their oath of office by abusing the people, and that it is your job or your duty to protect the victim? Do you know that the sheriff is the chief executive and administrative officer of a county, his principal duties being to aid in the criminal and civil courts of record, that's common law courts, such as serving summoning juries, executing judgments, holding judicial sales, and the like, and that he is also the chief conservator of the peace within the county? Do you know that you are not to be looking for code violations by the people, but for constitutional violations by the elected, appointed, and hired servants? Do you know that when federal agents come into your county to execute a warrant, that they are to notify you first and show documents proving due process has been met, and that without such documents it is your duty to prevent the execution, or you would be co-conspirator? Do you know that it is your duty to arrest federal agents that execute unlawful warrants that violate due process? Do you know what due process looks like? Do you know that most federal warrants do not meet due process, and that makes you co-conspirator? Do you know that you should have direct contact with the grand jury, and that you should not seek approval of the prosecutor or a judge, and that it is your duty to seek an indictment from a grand jury? Do you know that when a prosecutor or a judge interferes with your relationship with the grand jury or attempts to stop your pursuit of an indictment, that that is felony rescue? And that you should arrest the prosecutor or the judge for the same, or you would be guilty of the same? Do you know that if a prosecutor or a judge tries to block you from seeking a grand jury, that you can call 25 people out of the phone book or any other list of people within the county and have them meet you at the courthouse to consider an indictment? And that if 13 or more agree, you have your indictment. There is no magic in calling a grand jury. Any 25 people will do. Do you know that the judge and the prosecutor, by monopolizing on the calling of the grand jury, controls who gets indicted and who doesn't, and that they put them, and that puts them above the law and eliminates you out of the process altogether? And by allowing this to happen, you violate your oath. How many times do we hear sheriffs say, "I cannot arrest the judge without first getting the prosecutor to agree, otherwise the prosecutor may refuse to prosecute"? So if the sheriff needs to ask permission, he's not the chief, and he passes his duties to others, and any sheriff that does that is in violation of his oath. Do you know that Alaska, Arizona, Vermont, and Wyoming have no laws requiring pistol owners to have permits to carry? Colorado, Iowa, Georgia, Kentucky, Maine, New Hampshire, Ohio, Oklahoma, Rhode Island, South Carolina, South Dakota, and Virginia, according to the NRA, are considering bills in current legislative sessions to end permit requirements. The United States Supreme Court, quoting the rules of criminal and civil procedure, said, "The carrying of arms in a quiet, peaceable, and orderly manner concealed on or about the person is not a breach of the peace, nor does such an act of itself lead to a breach of the peace." And that is, Judy versus Landley. There's quite a few citations here. How can the sheriff participate in gun control? The Bill of Rights, Amendment 2, states, "A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed." Do you know this amendment protects two unalienable rights, both of which articulate the right of self-defense? One personal, the right to protect yourself from another individual, shall not be infringed, and the other to protect ourselves from tyrannous government shall not be infringed. Some may say the right to keep and bear arms is for the militia. This makes no sense because we the people are the militia. Nor are we the people willing to give up our unalienable right to be able to defend ourselves. Therefore, if the sheriff does not protect the right of the people to keep and bear arms, he is in violation of his oath and subject to removal from office by the people through indictment. The real test of the sheriff's constitutional fortitude in states that require permits is he going to protect the people from rogue statutes and bureaucrats or compromise the law? Do you know that all arrests or seizures warrants must have a wet ink signature of a federal or state judge, not city, town, or village, and supported by an affidavit by the injured party, and that without these two requirements cannot execute the warrant, and to do so would make you a co-conspirator and in violation of your oath? Can you discern when the people's rights are being violated? When was the last time that you or deputies arrested an elected, appointed, or hired servant for violating their unalienable rights? We watch video after video on the YouTubes of rights being violated, and the sheriff is not making arrests. Why? Do you know when a video of police brutality, especially when death occurred, turns up on YouTube or the news, that the sheriff can call the grand jury and get an indictment, even when the corporate authorities won't? Why do federal agents file papers without due process in all 3,144, it should be 34 counties, 33 counties, across America, and the sheriff does nothing? Why do city, town, and village courts who do not have subject matter or personam jurisdiction deliver people to the county jail and you accept them when their victims did not get due process as required by the Constitution? Do you know the difference between law and statutes? If you did not know about these things before, you know about them now. And if you are not bold enough to learn and perform your duties, you should resign immediately. America is a nation that depends on law and order to survive, and it is the sheriff that is the defender of liberty, without which we would have no liberty. And I dare to say, in the courts, we the people have lost our liberty, because the sheriff does not know the law. And finally, do you know that by remaining ignorant to all or any of these things, you are part of the problem, and you are in violation of your oath, and susceptible to arrest when justice finds its way back into the courts? And it will find its way. If you would like to learn and understand these things and more, go to www.powerofthecountysheriff.com, and we will show you the law that will empower you to secure liberty on your watch. Thank you for your time. We the people. Okay, so that's the paper we're going to be sending out. I'm hoping to start faxing tomorrow if we can make sure we have good grammar in here and punctuation, get it as best we can and get it out. I don't think we're far off, but nevertheless, that's what we have. Now, the page we're sending these people to, I don't know whether I'm going to read all of this, but I'm going to read some of it anyway. I'll see where we go with this. But it's the power of the county sheriff, and this is where we want to get to them. We want to empower them. We want to understand who they are, what their authority is. That nobody, he is the end results of the Constitution. Whatever he says, it is it. And of course, if he's in error, the people will correct him. But he brings it to the people for that purpose of getting an indictment. And he has no need to go and see a prosecutor to get a grand jury. He needs to call the people himself. He needs to go to the administrators of the grand jury. And right now they have, I forget what it's called. I think we have it in here. We'll read about it shortly. But anyway, he needs to go to the administrators, and he needs to call for the grand jury and not get permission from the prosecutor. Obviously, if he goes to the commission of jurors, that's what they call them now. I know here in Dutchess County, where I live, they're commissioners of jurors. Those people got to go. Those are the people that are supposed to be calling the jury, but they're totally puppetized by both the prosecutor and the judge, who control the jury ultimately themselves. They're just people doing the paperwork and the phone calls and the letters, and they're really secretarial and have no authority and don't do anything to protect the people. We need administrators that are there working for the people, who are not political, who don't work directly for the government, are not bound by the government, but bound by the oath or the vow that they take to God before the people, and to protect their unalienable rights by calling for the grand jury, and to permit the grand jury to come together anytime the sheriff needs it. There'll never be a denial. Who gave the authority to the prosecutors to be able to make a deal with a criminal? We the people never gave them the authority. You don't find that in the Constitution. There is no authority. You don't even find it in state constitutions, nor can you. Because they don't have the authority to forgive anybody of anything, to make any kind of a deal. They just don't have the authority. The only ones that have the authority are the people. They should be going to the jury, the grand jury, making the deal with them, seeing if it's offering to the idea of a deal in order to save them from going into a courtroom and going through the trial. If the person is willing to plead guilty, well, we can do this. But it's the grand jury that has to make that arrangement. It's the grand jury that has to make sure that not only whatever is required whatever the crime was, that first and foremost restitution is in mind. Restitution for the injured party is a necessity. And in violent crimes, in certain situations, jail times would be appropriate. But restitution is important. It is what the law is all about, to settle the account. They settle the account with corporations. We, the people, settle accounts with people and get restitution, get justice. And we do that in courts of justice, which we don't have now, and we are going to go and reinstate them. Okay, so that letter is to get these sheriffs to this page. I'm going to read some of this. I don't know how much, but we're going to start reading. The purpose of this page is to, and this is the first time I'm reading through this page out loud too, so we may be making some corrections. I'm sure we do have to make corrections to this page. It was just put over the weekend, and we haven't had it proofread or anything. The purpose of this page is to empower the county sheriff and U.S. Marshal through knowledge of the supreme law of the land and history, in order that they may serve the people and save or preserve America. There is no elected or appointed official that can remove the sheriff or marshal from office. The sheriff is elected by the people of their county, and the marshal is appointed by the president, who was vested with that power by we the people through the United States Constitution. In the case Marbury versus Madison in 1803, the court made it clear that the Constitution gave the power to the president to appoint, but not the power to remove. That is reserved to the people alone through indictment for bad behavior. There are only two law enforcement offices in America, the county sheriff and the U.S. Marshal. The sheriff is the only elected law enforcer whose duty it is to protect the unalienable rights of the people both in the courtroom and within the county, while the U.S. Marshal is responsible for protecting the unalienable rights of the people in the federal courtroom. The sheriff is the only person able to call for a posse comitatus, referred at common law to all males over the age of 15 on whom a sheriff could call for assistance in preserving any type of civil disorder. Today, under a national emergency, the sheriff is both the first and last line of defense should our government go rogue, since Congress has been derelict in their duty in providing for the militia. U.S. Constitutional Article 1, Section 6, Clauses 8, 15, and 16. The Congress shall have power to provide for the calling forth of the militia to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrection, and repel invasion, to provide for organizing, arming, and disciplining the militia, and for governing such part as of them as may be employed in the service of the United States, reserving to the states respectively the appointing of the officers and the authority of training the militia according to the discipline prescribed by Congress. The Bill of Rights makes it clear two things. A well-regulated militia is an unalienable right, and a well-regulated militia is necessary to our security. Amendment 2, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to bear arms shall not be infringed. Today, all seats of government have unlawfully incorporated, and therefore all police forces, city, town, villages, states, work for corporations and owe their allegiance to the corporations there in code enforcement offices, whereas sheriffs and marshals are constitutional officers owing allegiance to the people. There exists no constitutional authority for police forces. U.S. Constitution, Article 6, Clause 2, this Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made pursuant thereof, and all the treaties made of all which shall be made under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land. And the judges in every state shall be bound thereby, anything in the Constitution or laws of any state to the contrary notwithstanding. The Declaration of Independence, U.S. Constitution, and the Bill of Rights are founded under common law, also known as the supreme law of the land. All cases at law, Black's Law 4th, within constitutional guarantee of jury trial, refers to common law actions, as distinguished from causes of equity, inequity, and certain other proceedings. Bremhurst versus Beckman. The sheriff and the U.S. Marshal, just like we the people, have lost their way. We have forgotten who we are and by what authority we act upon, and therefore our servants rule over us. The purpose of this site is to help us find our way back to the liberties our founding fathers discovered and pledged their lives, their fortune, and their sacred honor to establish for themselves and their posterity. It is now our turn, our duty, to rediscover our roots for ourselves and our posterity. There are forces within our government that are doing everything they can to prevent that from happening. These people are called progressives, and over the years they have taken control of both parties and thereby methodically removed civics, God, and constitutional studies from our education, and through the media, entertainment, and education have demoralized us. What we, the people, and our sheriffs need to know is that we, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure the domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America, preamble to the U.S. Constitution. When we, the people, ordained common law, U.S. Constitution, Article 6, the supreme law of the land, we the people took control of all decision-making within the courts through grand and trial juries, and the common law sheriffs became the only law enforcement of the court and the county. The common law court is well established and defined in history, Black's Law and Brovier's Law. The sheriff is the chief executive and administrative officer of a county chosen by popular election. His principal duties are to aid in of the criminal and civil courts of record, common law courts, such as serving, processing, summoning juries, executing judgments, holding judicial sales, and the like. He is also the chief conservator of the peace within his territorial jurisdiction. Hartson versus Langston. The word sheriff is a contraction of the term shire reeve, meaning the royal official responsible for keeping the peace throughout a shire or county on behalf of the king. We, the people, ordained the Constitution for the United States of America, which puts the people as the said king above the Constitution and our elected servants under the Constitution. Therein the great American experiments. Our servants have no power than that which we the people gave them, and any law they write to the contrary is null and void as if it had never been passed. As we read, all laws, rules, practices which are repugnant to the Constitution, null and void. Marbury versus Madison. Where rights secured by the Constitution are involved, there can be no rulemaking or legislation which would abrogate them. Miranda versus Arizona. Sheriff's term of office and removal from office. State constitutions require the election of the sheriff for 2 or 4 year terms. His full authority is defined in common law history and cannot be altered. The sheriff can only be removed from power at the ballot box or by the people for bad behavior through indictment. Not upholding his oath would be bad behavior. Good behavior. The term good behavior means conduct that is authorized by law, and bad behavior means conduct that such as the law will punish. State versus Hardin. Good behavior means merely conduct comfortable, conformable to law, or to a particular law thereof, therefore breached. Baker versus Commonwealth. Sheriff and the jury. Although many states write statutes on how the state usually, through the prosecutor, calls the grand jury, such statutes have no control over the sheriff or the people. History recalls that the sheriff is usually the one who calls for the grand jury, after or before he makes an arrest. And the state calls for the grand jury if the state wants to accuse someone of a crime. In all cases, it is the people through the grand jury who will decide if a crime was committed or not by indictment. The administration for the grand jury, also known as the investigative body for the grand jury, is made up of four people who are not elected or appointed, but raised out from among the people. We find this process has been established since at least 1215 AD and is described in the Magna Carta. Most states have statutory commissioners of jurors that are political appointments and therefore are an abomination to common law. The power of the people. In the 1992 court case, United States versus Williams, Justice Anton Scalia, writing for the majority, confirmed that the American grand jury is neither part of the judicial, executive, nor legislative branches of government, but instead belongs to the people. It is, in effect, a fourth branch of government, governed and administered to directly by and on behalf of the American people, and its authority emanates from the Bill of Rights. Thus, citizens have the unbridled right to impanel their own grand juries and present true bills of indictment to a court, which as then required to commence a criminal proceeding. Our founding fathers precedently thereby created a buffer the people may rely upon for justice when public officials, including judges, criminally violate the law. We the people have been providentially provided legal recourse to address the criminal conduct of persons themselves entrusted to dispense justice. In the Supreme Court case, the United States versus Williams, whereas the court said, because the grand jury is an institution separate from the courts over whose functioning the courts do not preside, we think it clear that as a general matter, at least, no such supervisory judicial authority exists, rooted in long centuries of Anglo-American history. The grand jury is mentioned in the Bill of Rights, but not in the body of the Constitution. It has not been textually assigned, therefore, to any of the branches described in the first three articles. It is a constitutional fixture in its own right. In fact, the whole theory of its function is that it belongs to no branch of the institutional government, serving as a kind of a buffer or referee between the government and the people. Although the grand jury normally operates, of course, in the courthouse and under judicial auspices, its institutional relationship with the judicial branch has traditionally been, so to speak, at arm's length. Judges' direct involvement in the functioning of the grand jury has generally been confined to the constructive one of calling the grand juries together and administering their oaths of office. Someone's mic is open, by the way. The grand jury's functional independence from the judicial branch is evident both in the scope and in the power investigative to investigate criminal wrongdoing, and in the manner in which that power is exercised. Unlike a court whose jurisdiction is predicated upon a specific case or controversy, the grand jury can investigate merely on suspicion that the law is being violated, or even because it wants just the insurance that it is not. It need not identify the offender or suspects or even the precise nature of the offense it is investigating. The grand jury requires no authorization from its constituting court to initiate an investigation, nor does the prosecutor require leave of court to seek a grand jury indictment. And in its day-to-day functioning, the grand jury generally operates without the interference of a presiding judge. It swears in its own witnesses and deliberates in total secrecy. We have been insisted that the grand jury remain free to pursue its investigations unhindered by external influences or supervision, so long as it does not trench upon the legitimate rights of any witnesses called before it. Recognizing this tradition of independence, we have said that the Fifth Amendment's constitutional guarantee presupposes an investigative body acting independently of either prosecuting attorney or judge. Therein, the process that we are setting up. Given the grand jury's operational separateness from its constituting court, it should be of no surprise that we have been reluctant to invoke the judicial supervisory power as a basis for prescribing modes of grand jury procedure. Over the years, we have received many requests to exercise supervision over the grand jury evidence-taken process, but we have refused them all, including some more appealing than the one presented today. In Calandra versus the United States, a grand jury witness faced questions that were allegedly based upon physical evidence the government had obtained through a violation of the Fourth Amendment. We rejected the proposal that the extraordinary rule be extended to the grand jury proceeding because of the potential injury to historic role and functioning of the grand jury. We declined to enforce the hearsay rule in the grand jury proceeding since that would run counter to the whole history of the grand jury institute by which laymen conduct their inquiries unfettered by technical rules. Judges and prosecutors are above the law. A common complaint from sheriffs is, I cannot arrest the judge without first getting prosecutors to agree, otherwise the prosecutor may refuse to prosecute. The question that begs to be answered is, where did the prosecutor get such power? Certainly we the people did not give it to them in the Constitution, and certainly Congress can make no law that we did not give them the power to make. We the people did not ordain the prosecutor chief law enforcer, but the sheriff. Solution. If the prosecutor refuses to prosecute, they should be arrested for felony rescue. Period. The sheriff is not to go begging the prosecutor for an indictment. He shouldn't even be going to the prosecutor at all, but to the grand jury directly and ask them for an indictment. The problem is that the judge and the prosecutor deny sheriffs and the people access to the grand jury. After 6 years of practicing law without bar degree, we found that many judges and prosecutors have something to hide. So they protect each other by blocking access to the grand jury. They fear what you may ask of the grand jury. So if the sheriff needs to ask permission, he's not the chief, and he's passing his duties to others. And any sheriff that does that is in bad behavior. If a sheriff cannot get access to the jury administrator, also known as the commissioners of jurors, directly, he has the power and the authority to summon 25 people out of any pool, phone book, or etc., to the courthouse jury room and ask for an indictment. We, the people, did not give prosecutors power to negotiate deals with people under indictment. Prosecutors may propose a deal to the grand jury for decision, but the arrangements must be offered a plan for restitution acceptable to the injured party, or due process and trial by jury must run its course. Gun control. Alaska, Arizona, Vermont, we read this a little earlier, that all of these, these certain states don't require a permit, and many states seem to be moving according to the NRA. And the United States Supreme Court said the carrying of arms is in a quiet, peaceable, and orderly manner concealed on or about the person is not a breach of the peace, nor does the act itself lead to the breach of the peace. The Bill of Rights talks about a well-regulated militia, and so we had read this in our other paper. We'll get to the conclusion. If the sheriff does not protect the rights of the people to keep and bear arms, he is in violation of his oath and thereby in bad behavior and subject to removal from office by the people through indictment. The real test of the sheriff's constitutional fortitude in states that require permits is he going to protect the people from rogue statutes and bureaucrats or compromise the law? Arrest or seizure warrants. All arrest seizure warrants must have a wet ink signature of a federal or state judge, not city, town, or village, supported by an affidavit. IRS seizures require a wet ink signature of a federal judge and two forms of affidavits. They are the IRS Form 56, Fiduciary Relationship, and IRS Form 4490, Proof of Claim, both must be signed under notary magistrate. The Bill of Rights, Amendment 4, the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrant shall be issued upon probable cause supported by an oath or affirmation and particularly describing the place to be searched and the person or things to be seized. Sheriff must refuse warrants execution without signatures and affidavits. To proceed would be a violation of their oath and therefore in bad behavior. SWAT. Anytime any police force, including federal agents, uses SWAT and raid attacks, usually in the middle of the night, against one of the people because they allegedly owe money, is an assault upon liberty and the sheriff's obligation for by oath to stop it and make arrests if necessary. Right to travel. The right to travel cannot be licensed. The right of the citizen to travel upon the public highways and to transport his property thereon, either by carriage or automobile, is not a mere privilege which a city may forbid or permit at will, but a common right he has under the right of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Thompson versus Smith. Even a legislator has no power to deny it to a citizen the right to travel upon a highway and transport his property in the ordinary course of his business or pleasure. Though this right may be regulated in accordance with the public interest and convenience, regulated here means stoplight signs, not privileges that require permission or unconstitutional taxation, i.e. licensing, mandatory insurance, vehicle registration, etc., requiring financial considerations which are more illegal taxes. Chicago Motor Coach versus Chicago. Black's second license in a law of contracts is the permission, according to a competent authority, conferring the right to do some act which, without such authorization, would be illegal or be a trespass or tort. Rights. The claim to exercise a constitutional right cannot be converted into a crime. Miller versus U.S. Inalienable. Not subject to alienation, separation, the characteristic of those things which cannot be bought or sold or transferred from one person to another, such as rivers, public highways, and certain personal rights, e.g., liberty, inalienable, incapable of being alienated, that is, sold and transferred. Rights, Black's fourth, are defined generally as powers of free action, and the primal right pertaining to men are undoubtedly enjoyed by human beings purely as such, being grounded in personality and existing antecedently to their recognition by positive law, free, not subject to legal constraint for another. I'm going to skip some of this. Let me jump right down to due process. Bill of Rights, Fifth Amendment. No person shall be held to answer for capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on a presentment or an indictment by the grand jury, except in cases arising in land, naval forces, and so on and so forth. We're not going to read all that, but anyway. Nor shall it be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against him, nor be deprived of rights of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. The question is, what is an infamous crime? Black's Law 4th states, and I'll just make it plain, any event that requires someone to be jailed, incarcerated, imprisoned, that's infamous. Conclusion. Anybody that is facing jail time must be indicted and tried in a court of law. A summons or police report is not sufficient. Additionally, there is a common law maxim which states in order for there to be a crime, there must be a sworn affidavit by an injured party, and the state cannot be that injured party. Any sheriff finding that he inherited the housing of prisoners in the county jail that did not get due process or is housing political prisoners, and would be guilty of conspiracy if he did not do the right thing as soon as he awakened and realized it. Any court that does not necessitate due process would not be a court of law. City courts, town courts, and village courts do not necessitate due process, but statutes. So what is the solution? The answer is to petition the grand jury in a federal court for a habeas corpus, and the court will demand proof of due process. And if they fail to prove due process, the court will order their release. If you cannot find a common law grand jury in your federal district, we already have jury pools nationwide in all 94 federal districts in America, and our administrators can help initiate the paperwork and court process. And we give them two phone numbers to call. If they want to file the paper, you know, file for the paperwork, we'll put it out for them, and we'll get them into the process. To make a relationship, a partnership with the sheriffs from this perspective, where they're coming to us for help, and we work the paperwork out, and to free people under these conditions and these kinds of things would be huge, and definitely would slingshot us right into the courts. Because then when we bring forth the paperwork from our perspective, they will also uphold it and enforce the law. Then we'll get some real, real connection and work and relationships between the people and the sheriff. Jurisdictions. Only courts of records, also known as common law courts, have jurisdiction over the people. All courts of record proceed with a tribunal, also known as a jury, under the rules of common law. All city, towns, criminal, and village courts are not courts of record because they proceed according to the rules of chancery and not law, and therefore have no jurisdiction over the people. If a judge refuses to answer the accused by what authority they act, then they do not have jurisdiction. The only answer is common law, U.S. Constitution, Article 6. Trial courts act with the jurisdiction when it acts without inherent or common law authority. Let me reread that. Trial courts act without jurisdiction when it acts without inherent or common law authority. State versus Rodriguez. Any court that proceeds with summary judgments are not common law courts and have no jurisdiction over the people. Summary proceedings. Black's Fourth. Any proceeding by which a controversy is settled, case disposed of, a trial conducted in a prompt and simple manner, without the aid of a jury, without presentment or indictment, or in other respect, out of the regular course of the common law, in procedure, proceedings are said to be summary when they are short and simple in comparison with regular proceedings, i.e., in comparison with the proceedings which alone would have been applicable either in the same or analogous cases if summary proceedings had not been available. Sweet versus Phillips versus Phillips. I may skip some of this. Let me see. And everybody should read through this thoroughly on their own. And again, we'll make whatever corrections we need to make, hopefully in the next few days. Just read a couple of these things. If there is no sworn affidavit by an injured party, there is no crime. There can be no case. No more than an affidavit is necessary to make the prima facie case. United States versus KISS. Allegations in an affidavit in support of a motion, it's an action, must be considered as true in absence of a counter affidavit. Silence, and that's Group versus Finletter. Silence can only be equated with fraud where there is a legal or moral duty to speak, or where iniquity, an inquiry found unanswered would be intentionally misleading. U.S. versus Tweel. All right, I'm going to skip a whole bunch of cases here. It gives the sheriff some power and authority that he can rest upon. Let me get to the conclusion. The sheriffs are not to carry out the decisions of the court not of record, and have a duty to arrest judges and prosecutors who continue to proceed under the color of law to prosecute we the people. Common law structure, I'll skip that. Well, basically it's the tribunal, magistrate, coroner, prosecutor, and bailiff. That's it. That's the makeup of a court of record. And a court of record or a common law can go forward without a magistrate. Both there in history, we have found coroners running through the court case, making sure that things move accordingly. And we've also seen sheriffs also going through the process and being able to run a court case. Generally, there is, of course, a magistrate If the person is a judge, they also have to be a all judges are magistrates, as a matter of fact. So any judge that comes into a court of record becomes a magistrate, therefore just a traffic cop, just making sure things move along. Law versus statutes. I'm just going to read a little bit of this. Laws are created by God, common law, and written in the hearts of all men. Thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, and simply put, thou shalt do no harm. Statutes are written by men to control society. Lawful statutes that become law are governed by two documents, the U.S. Constitution and the Bill of Rights. Constitutions are written and initiated by the people to give government limited but necessary powers. U.S. legislative powers is limited to 18 powers. See U.S. Constitution, Article 1, Section 8. And quo warranto from We the People, filed in all 94 federal district courts, served upon all states and U.S. governments reminding them of their limitation of powers. All state constitutions are restricted by the U.S. Constitution. We quote again Article 6 here. We also talk about rights and powers and so on. I'm not going to read through all this. Again, people should go through this themselves. Coming to the conclusions, governments use statutes to control the will of society and the individuals. This kind of statutory control dates back to Babylon, and as governments ratchet down the control of the people, they become more and more authoritarian, whereas egotistical, power-hungry people fill the positions that lord over the people to the point that just challenging these people will find them in jail, whether they are guilty of a crime or not. The society will be as just as it courts. The American people do not need government to control their will and punish their every action. That's the totalitarian governments. That's what totalitarian governments do. Under common law, we the people are responsible for our own actions. This is written in the hearts of men, and if we injure another, just courts require restitution, not punishment, whereas crimes often require both restitution and punishment that actually restore people back into society. Clearly, our out-of-control judiciary does not and will not and cannot accomplish this goal because they rule by status quo, statutes, and vindictiveness, and not just laws. The following videos prove the point. Now, we've got two videos here, and if you haven't seen these videos, you really have to watch them. What's his name? Stossel did one on spontaneous order. It's not that long a video. I think it's about 15 minutes. It's really interesting. Everybody should watch this because this gives you an idea on how society does not need all these controls. People, there is a spontaneity that takes control over the people as they interact with each other. It's a natural form, just like bees working in a honey hive or ants working their hills and getting food and bringing things and doing all the work. They just do it, and it's spontaneous. People, how much more will people be spontaneous? But anyway, there's another video here. This is about 30 minutes long. I was blown away when I first saw this video. It's Traffic Control, The Road to Nowhere. These are must-see videos, both of these videos. Now, if you click on the spontaneous order, I think you'll find them both on both top of these videos. Let me click on them to make sure. There is an actual study that has been done. This was Stossel was responding to. Yeah, the tradition of spontaneous order. This is a 47-page report on spontaneous order, the nature of society and how things work and how people figure things out. And again, these two videos will make it clear on how much better we can do when we're not told everything we have to do. We're not children, and they're not our parents. We know what we have to do, and we should injure none. So that, of course, is the basis of common law. Injure no one. And our courts may even have that. Injure no one. And our courts injure all of us all the time, constantly, finding always for the corporation. All right, at the bottom of this, we have a whole bunch of documents. We have all the documents that we filed with the courts. We have the open letter to the sheriff, which is also on the top. We also have some samples of the forms 4490 and 56 that the IRS is required in order to take you into a court. and without those two forms filled out and sworn to, they have no power and authority in their own court. Okay? And they can't get those forms filled out on people. And they will not. So that is a very powerful knowledge to have, that when they don't use those forms, they could do nothing. But we have some really good cases here that we threw in. You know, I don't know if anybody's read Miranda versus Arizona. Filled with all kinds of freedoms and nuggets concerning freedom. Marbury versus Madison, a real eye-opener, bringing the courts back under the control back in 1803. They've already started already in just a few years that they had, 1789 to 1803. Their very first act was the Judiciary Act, which was a good act in some ways because it really set down the process of law that we the people gave to the legislators to legislate in order to get this out. But they went beyond that and started changing things. They turned our common law courts into chancery. Our courts go according to chancery and not common law. The rules of chancery and not the rules of common law. Of course, that's what Marbury versus Madison beat down, and among numerous other things that came out of that Judiciary Act. That was the enemy sneaking in trying to take control. And the United States Supreme Court squashed it pretty quickly, and they squashed it very easily because of the Capstone Bill of Rights. Okay, we also have some great quotes from some individuals here, and we also have some NLA papers that were written. We want to share all this with the sheriff. We feel if they read these papers and start looking at these things and taking our free civics course, they really will come to an appreciation and an understanding of their power and their authority and their duty. And that's what we need to drive out to them. So we have a campaign starting this week. We will be sending out email when we're ready to go forward with. And that is, we're going to be faxing these papers probably starting tomorrow. We're going to try to perfect them before tomorrow and start to get them out maybe tomorrow night or whatever. We'll then send an email out to let people know that they can download the latest paper, and they can get that to their sheriff. Everyone should, you should organize your states. Get together with your state coordinators and get together. County organizers should pull together and work with the state coordinators and also drive down to the other members within our structure and pull people together and get on a mission, get on a program. Get moving to get the message out to all of the sheriffs in your county. You need power, you need authority, you need the law. You know, we the people on the Unified United States Common Law Grand Juries and all of the state grand juries and all of the, ultimately the county, which is really where we're heading to, the county grand juries and trial juries. But we the people, you know, we are really trying to bring back what our founding fathers gave us. We need to let them know that we're not the terrorists that these bar attorneys and judges claim we are, and try to deter them from looking at us and reading our words and seeing what they need to do. We indeed are the people. We are many thousands of people across America with the intent of bringing justice and our founding principles back into our courts and into our government. And that's who we are. And all they need to do is start looking at some of these things and reading some of these things, and they will be on board. There's no doubt in my mind or heart. Okay, that brings us to the end of tonight, looking into the sheriff. We're going to open up for a conversation in a minute. Just want to make a few announcements. We still need more funding. I sent out an email today, earlier today. We just don't have enough money to pay the bills and do the mailings and everything we need to do. We need money. We're just barely getting by. And whenever we have something special coming up, it just absorbs the money very quickly, and we just don't have the money to pay the bills then. But we do have to get these mailing out. We are writing a paper to Congress. We spoke about this a week or two ago. I really hope that we're going to get this paper done this week and be able to read it next Monday. So if we can do that, that'd be really great. But we're not going to be able to mail that letter out unless we have money. Now, it is true, we got faxes going out, and that cost us money. The faxes alone cost us about a little over $400 a month for the phone access. Other than that, the cost the minimum. You know, we bought a computer to just run faxes, and we've got access into the internet and a few things. But we've already paid the money for the hardware. We spent quite a few $1,000s for hardware. We brought the software. Everything's in place and paid for on that level. But we have a $400 bill every month that we do not get enough money to pay that bill. So we really need more members really signing up to support us by sending us $5 a month or more. Of course, if you could send more than $5, we can use it. There are a lot of people that send $20, $10. You know, they send more than $5, and we really appreciate that. Some people send $50 and $100. But we're just making enough to barely pay the bills, and the new bills we're unable to keep up on. Now, we need to mail out physical mailing to the to Congress. That's 540 letters. We have to print them out. We have to put them in envelopes. We have to put stamps on it. And that's going to cost quite a bit of money. You know, just do the math. It's going to be a couple ounces a piece, okay? So it's going to be at least $1 a piece for the stamp. And then there's the envelope and the toner and the paper. And then, and we'll figure, we'll do the labor ourselves. That'll be volunteer. But look, we need money to do these things. And there are a lot of people who are not giving. They're here, but they're not giving. Come on, $5 at most everyone can afford. It's very rare if a person can't afford $5, very rare. And there are some people, and I appreciate that they're really struggling, and that extra $5 is that they just don't have it. But generally speaking, 99.9% or 99% of the people can afford $5 or more. Support this action, support this work, or lose America. We are the only hope of getting a peaceful resolution here. We are the only hope of being able to put off a violent situation that these people that have taken control of our government are dead set on having. Once we get the sheriffs on board and knowledgeable, they can and will prevent this from happening working with the people. They don't have a chance of getting anything done if the sheriffs understand what's going on. And if the sheriffs are on board on understanding their power, their authority, and exercising and executing their duty, they don't have a chance. And that's why we have to get the word out. We also look at Congress. One of the big focuses to the message to the Congress is about the militia. They have not funded the militia, and it's time now that they fund the militia. They need to do their job and do their duty. And I believe this is the 113th. I was looking last week to figure out. I think I read it was 113th Congress. We, the people, are going to hold the 113th Congress responsible and liable for the sins of all Congresses past, because we're going to notify them and we're going to let them know what's going on, and they need to fix the problem, and they need to do it now or resign. And that's the ultimatum we need to give Congress. And at the end of the game, when we find out who was not up to bat on this thing, we are going to look and consider indictments. We, the people, are going to look at every single one of them and consider indictments on the Congress, and both Congress, the House and the Senate, both of them. So, but this can only happen if we, the people, support these actions. We have to put up the money in order to do these things, to put out these things. We need to put up the money to keep up and going. You know, we've grown in leaps and bounds. We have, our costs grow with our growth. Okay, constantly looking for more space. I mean, I think coming up to a point we've got to buy more space again, and that's a monthly payment on that, buying more space, and broadband. That's the biggie. You know, broadband gets very expensive. When you got a lot of people coming to a website and it's buzzing and buzzing and buzzing and people are downloading things, the broadband bills up and we have to pay that broadband. And if we don't pay the broadband, then what they do is they shut us off at some point and until we catch up, and then they'll turn us back on again and shut us off. And we'll be here and not be here, be here and not be here, and be here and not be here. We can't afford not to be here when someone puts in National Liberty Alliance.org or Power of the Common Law or Power of the County Sheriff, and then they get a notice that it's temporary down because of broadband problems. We haven't paid the bill. But anyway, look it. We're either going to save America or we're not. It's up to you. Either we support what we're doing or you don't, and we won't save America. As for me, I'm going to do everything I can to do what has to be done, whatever I can possibly do to get the job done. And I certainly hope everybody that listens in, either live or on radio, or even on a radio's live, but also that listen into our downloads at later times, I certainly hope that they too agree and will help support National Liberty Alliance. You know, we appreciate sometimes someone will give us a decent-sized check at a time when we really need it, and it gets us through. And that's really great. You know, we definitely need that from time to time. But what we really, really need is to stabilize by getting a constant income on a monthly basis by people giving $5 a month. We would have huge amounts of money. We could do so many different things. If all of our members gave $5 a month, it would be huge, huge. And we would never have to ask for money again because we'd have plenty of money to be able to do everything that we have to do and more. And we would even be able to send, you know, right now when we send things to the sheriffs, I really would like to send some hard papers to the sheriffs. But we have 3,134, whatever it is, 43 sheriffs, okay? That's a lot of letters. I mean, you know, you just figure out if it's 3 pages long. Just if it's 3 pages like the one we're doing here, over 3,000, that's, goodness, 10 reams of paper. That's a whole case of paper that has to be printed out. That's a whole bunch of toner, a whole lot of folding and stuffing and sealing, putting the seal on it. And a whole bunch of just, it'll be $3,200 just for the stamps. So, you know, it's a lot of money. If everybody was given $5, we could afford that. We'd be able to afford to do that from time to time. We definitely have to, you know, we did live, you know, we did actual hard copy mail to the governors when we send the governor's papers. And we stopped Jade Helm. We at National Liberty Alliance, we the people, Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, we stopped, or at least put off for now, Jade Helm. Jade Helm has not happened because of what we have done. I am absolutely convinced of that. And we need to continue the pressure and continue it by sending this out, this open letter to the sheriff, to all of the elected officials, which we'll do by fax, to send it to all of them, okay, puts them on notice and puts the fear of the people into their hearts, and the fear of the sheriff. Hey, the sheriff may arrest me. The sheriff is, look at what they're telling the sheriff to do. Look at, wow, you know, he may call a grand jury and put me in jail. These judges better watch what they're doing, okay, in the courtrooms, because the sheriff may be sitting in there, and we the people will be sitting in there, and we're going to hold them accountable. We're going to start doing a lot of indictments soon. We're just not ready for a lot of that yet. We're still working on habeas corpuses and working with the sheriffs and getting our foot in the door and you know, putting the pressure on them, getting the papers out. Little by little, we'll get more and more power, more and more authority, more and more pressure, and we're going to accomplish our goal as long as we stay on the path, keep the course. And we need money to do that, so please, come on. Let's do what we got to do there. All right, that brings me to the end of that. I don't know if there are any other announcements. I know, Gary, we were going to bring something up, and I forget what it was. Oh, we need some serious people that would like to volunteer some time to do some research. We got numerous things we need to research out, but we need people who really know a little bit about how to research and get exactly what we need and put it together so that when we get it, we don't have to go through it and try to figure out what's garbage and what's good and, you know, and really get the heart of the matter together. But we have a lot of plans and a lot of things we want to do, but we have to do research in order to do it. And they're pretty powerful things. Okay, so anybody that could volunteer some time to do research with us and for us, you know, give a call to Gary. Gary, unmute yourself and let them know how they can get to you, whether you want to call them to call you or email you. We also need people to fill other committees. We have a lot of work to do and little time to do it in. We need more help. We need people volunteering. If the people don't stand up, who is going to stand up? And do not think, please do not think that, you know, oh, the next guy will do it. There's a lot of members. The next guy, because everyone else is thinking the same. It's always back to the core people that keep things going. We need more core people. Become a core person. Save America. Work with we the people. Become with we the people. Become we the people. And let's save America. Let's do it. Gary, you want to give some info on that?
This is Jan. We do need some people for media. We're looking for volunteers for all types that have all types of public relations capabilities. You know, we're looking for Facebook and Twitter and people can handle newspaper, TV, and so on. Anything at all. So if you would like to volunteer, or if you know someone that you think might, please talk to them. Ask them to volunteer if they would like. Gary says, get a hold of him by email by sending to gary@nationallibertyalliance.org. I'd also like to remind people, it's really busy getting on tonight. We do have two numbers you can call. The first is the 605-562-3140. And if that doesn't work, if you scan down on the login page on the website, you'll find there is a second number. That's 559-546-1400. That's 559-546-1400. And that's all I had.
Okay, thank you. All right, I guess we'll go to Q&A. Gerard, you got anything or anyone else before we go to Q&A? Just real quick, here's a question I saw, and I'm not sure whether we answered this in the past. It looks like it's a couple of weeks old, and I think we did answer it. But anyway, someone wrote, having been working with National Liberty Alliance since before it was NLA, one major question I have is, why are we going about this county by county when we could do it by federal district? And, of course, you know, again, I'm not sure whether you answered that, but the key thing is this, is we need four administrators in every county. There is a state court for every state in every county. And so there's where we need the administrators. So we need to build down to the county level. But we are also broken up in districts, and so we do have an organization of district leaders, and we also have state coordinators, and we have county organizers. And we need more of all of those. But nevertheless, we are somewhat organized in all of the 94, in all 94 federal districts, in the sense that there are lots of counties in each federal district, and we have lots of members in lots of counties. So we can provide for a federal jury, grand jury, or trial jury at any given time. We can provide for a physical jury to be pulled together if a sheriff wanted one. Remember that when they come with us, to us concerning constitutional violations, those constitutional violations become a federal offense or an action, because it's concerning violation under the Constitution, and so therefore it's in one of the 94 federal districts, and so we can muster together a physical grand jury in any one of those districts. We have enough people in our membership within our pool, and we can also get access to people within counties. Look, at all we need is really a handful of people in any district to be able to really pull together a jury within the counties within any federal district. But the key, again, is, again, organizing in every county four administrators in all 3,134, whatever it is, counties. And so that's about, 12,000, let's say 15,000 people we need to get ultimately to cover the entire nation, all 50 states. And, of course, those are paid positions. We will have to get rid of the, and then it's federal, it's professional positions when we get into the courts, of course, not before. But the people that they use right now, which are the commissioners of jurors, which are all administrative, they don't really get involved with anything other than paperwork and making phone calls, and that's it, you know. It's the judge and the prosecutor that speak to these juries. All that has to go away because the people have to take control. For them to continue, they're corporate people to begin with because they're working for the corporation and not for the trust, which is the government. The government is the trust. The government is still there. It's overlaid by a corporation, and the people are deceived not seeing it, thinking when they look at the corporation, they're seeing the actual government, the trust, and that's not true. We know that's been hijacked. But once we get rid of these all these tyrants throughout the states, then everyone will fall down into the trust, and we will have them under law and order. They will be bound to obey and do the right thing, and we will have saved the nation. It is a pretty simple process when you really think about it, and it's not going to take a lot of people, and it's not going to take a lot of money, but it does take people, and it does take money. You know, what, 300 million, 340 million, whatever it is, people in the United States, and yet we only need about 15,000, okay? 15,000 people to make it work. So, okay, we're going to move on to Q&A. Gerard, are you here?
Yeah, I am.
Okay, good. I'll take a few callers and I'll pass it over to you. But we're open, before anybody gets into the Q&A, we'd like to take anybody that is new to come in first. I'm going to clear the queue again. Nobody get in yet. First, I want people who are new. If there's anyone new, let's give them 10, 15 seconds to get in. Also, people that maybe have been trying to ask questions and get on the line for quite some time, let them come in. So let's give them 15, 20 seconds. I'll let you know when others can come in. Let's get the people who are new, people who have been trying to get into the queue on weeks on end and haven't been able to. Let's let them come in first, and then we'll fill the queue with others. Another 5 seconds, 4, 3, 2, 1. Okay, anybody into the queue now? Okay, we'll take our first question. We have someone from Idaho, Dr. Guy Wilson, it looks like. But anyway, Idaho, you got the mic. You've been muted.
Thank you so much. I have been working with a great patriot of our times. His name is David Hinkson. He was incarcerated some 12 years ago. He's being held as a political prisoner for basically standing up for our Constitution. He was railroaded into a murder-for-hire case, and then they put him in solitary confinement for 8 years, still being held in federal prison, trying to raise awareness of this atrocity for some time now. And we have tried so many different ways trying to get this innocent man out of jail, and we've come to understand that the Alliance here for Liberty is what he actually stands for, and we want to support your efforts. And of course, our ultimate goal is to get this great patriot out of jail so that he can help voice and free this nation, which is his goal. He was a radio talk show host, and therefore the government needs to silence him, and they have succeeded in doing so. With me is another gentleman by the name of Robert Sandberg, who has been involved in this case and has known David for over 20 years. I don't know what questions to ask at this particular time other than we're just seeking help and exposure to get this.
Well, we do have papers and information. I was just looking up to see what I have on him, Hinkson. David, I was speaking with some of the people working on the paperwork. I believe his case is in the works right now with us. So it is a case we're looking to handle. We did recently two habeas corpuses, both of which none have come to fruition yet, but we're about ready to put the hammer down and put the pressure on them. But we have noticed on the ones we've done in the past, they always take quite some time. One took 20, 25 days before they finally reacted. Because what they're doing right now is they're scrambling around trying to figure out how they can defeat the habeas corpus, how they can ignore it, how they can legally get around it, And they've tried numerous things in other cases that we were successful in, only to finally just break down and release the prisoner. So we just did one on a person that is in jail right now. Two people, actually, in the same trial. One got 20 years, the other one 25 years. They're both in jail about 10 years now. And so that habeas corpus is in process, and we're about ready to go after the chief judge who's responsible to make sure this happens. And we're hopefully going to be working with the sheriffs to make sure things happen if we can't get the leverage. But on the federal courts, we've been pretty good on it. It's down on the lower levels that they really don't care about anything. I think they have more fear in the federal courts because they have more knowledge and realization of what's going on and what they can get away with and how far they can push it. But on the lower levels, they're just that dumb that they really are ignorant. They do the most stupidest things. They got foot and mouth disease, and they're at a point they don't even talk to us anymore because they don't know what to say. They can't say anything, but they do try to ignore us. We also have a one out in Long Island we just did, and the sheriff said he would do the right thing. We're going to be calling him shortly. We wanted to get this stuff out on the sheriff first, maybe this week. We'll give him a week, and then we're going to give him a call. But he said he would do the right thing. They took away a home from a 78-year-old woman who owns a home out in Long Island and totally paid up, owes nothing. The whole thing is a fraud to begin with. But the auctioneer, who was a law firm that auctioneered it off, boldly went out and did the auction anyway. Sheriff wasn't there, so nothing was legal anyway. The sheriff did not take the property away from the woman. We're going to make sure he realized he better not take the property away from this woman. And that's what we're working on. As long as we have the sheriff on the side, we're good. But I think if we can establish a relationship with this sheriff, we can get an arrest too. We're going to look on contempt of court from this particular individual who went on with the... And the whole thing was a fraud. They set it up at 11 a.m. They didn't show up till 12:30. So they anticipated on having no one there so that they could win the bid. They took the bid themselves and won the bid themselves. And they think now they're going to throw this woman out. And they have no power and authority to do that. And the sheriff says he's not going to do the right thing and it's going to obey the Constitution, so we'll see where all this goes. But we do have to push. Now, these people, this is in New York City. These people know us, and they've already ignored us in the New York area. But now we're coming into the federal courts. It's a whole different story now because we have federal courts system behind us in that process. And they don't understand that, most of those people that are working on the state level. And so, it's just a matter of time and pressure. It's all about pressure, ultimately. You know, it's the membership we have. It's the fact that we have an address in every single state as a unified state grand juries coming together as a unified United States grand jury. We have thousands of members, and we have a very active group that come every Monday to these meetings. And also people that are involved in the committees and doing the paperwork and all the things necessary to accomplish these goals that we're trying to accomplish. We're teaching people how to write papers. And of course, we've got a civics course up there to teach them about common law, civics, history, and so on. So we're working at all this, but we are working on this case. And if you think you can give more information, well, I'll tell you what, make sure you give a call to Catherine. You'll find her on IRC. IRC. But the way to get there, if you go up to our website, you'll notice there's a new banner on the top right side. I think we talked about this last week, and there's a little, the smiley faces, but this is a frown. We're holding up a sign saying help. And if you click on that, you can go through the process to find someone over at the IRC. It's two clicks in. And you can find Catherine's phone number there. Give her a call and give her your number and let her know if we need any other information that you might be able to give it to us. And if we need more information, we'll get to you. But we are working on that case.
Well, thank you so much. We are very appreciative of that. Anything we can do to get this man out. He is considered a national treasure to the Liberty Movement, as well as some of the other health concepts and energy concepts that he has developed. So he is a political prisoner. They do want to keep this man silent, and we want to free him because the world needs his insight and knowledge. Thank you again.
Okay, appreciate it. All right, we'll take our next caller. Looks like Fred from California.
Hey, good evening. God bless you, John.
How you doing, Fred?
I'm very well. I just wanted to make sure that you got the coordinates for Chief Magistrate Phyllis Hamilton. I sent it off to you.
Yeah, I believe we have the information. If you want to send us something that you think we don't have, of course, send it in.
No, I sent that already, and I've been in touch with Brad. Brad's talking about sending out a blitz. And Dr. Gary, if you're still there, perhaps you could take down my number, and we could coordinate a little bit, because the illustrations that John was talking about are my case that I'm working on, with very similar circumstances to your case, and maybe we can coordinate. John, I'd like to donate on a regular basis, but I don't have a PayPal. Is there any other method? I have a debit card that could be debited every month. If that could be done without PayPal, I'd like to do that.
Well, there's two ways you could do it other than PayPal. You can go up to our donation page, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And when you click on the donation page, you can either send a check or a money order or something through the mail, or you can do a one-time payment, which doesn't require you to be a PayPal, PayPal account. But that then you would have to go every month to do that if you wanted.
Okay, well, that was simple for me to do. And the other thing, John, I could do that. The other thing that is pertinent to me, what you requested earlier, John, I have good skills. I have nothing else to do.
Hang on one second. I just want to let you know I'm going to be changing headsets in a minute. My battery's running dead, so if I fall away, Gerard, be ready to pick up. But go ahead. I'm going to try to do that as we're talking.
I just want you to know that someone was supposed to contact me regarding tutelage, to kind of put me on a track to run on. I'm available for committee. I'm available for volunteer. I'm a pretty qualified writer. I have a law degree. I'm not a bar attorney, but I have a law degree. I do know how to get around the law books and the writings. So if you will, have someone contact me, whomever you have, and just to give me some tutelage, just to put me on a track to run on, and I'll go after it like, looking for a snipe, man. I'll do it, whatever needs to be done. So this is the third or fourth request I'm making for that. Please, Gerard and John, I'm a able and qualified individual that can help if you'll get me, a track to run on. I don't want to duplicate what you're already doing. I'd like to do something that I can add to and help with getting some of the burden off of you guys.
Okay, that's good. I don't know if John's back yet or not.
All right.
Do
you have my phone number, Gerard?
Yeah, I have it.
A lot of this. Rod, pick up on this, and I'm still working on it.
I have your phone number, Fred.
Get back to me, or have someone get back to me.
Yeah, that's the 408 number.
We
got lots to do. We got research that needs doing, and
I'd be glad to do that. And I have and I have the time. That's the other thing. It's right. Not imposing on me in any way, shape, or form. I'm in a nursing home. Withering away without anything to do, and it's very stimulating for me to do it, and I'm available.
Good.
And also, Dr. Gary, Guy, if you'll contact me, let me give you my number. I'm not, if anybody can call me, it doesn't matter. 408-603-8707, Dr. Fred. And if you'll contact me, perhaps I can give you some insights and some things that we're doing or has done that'll give you a track to run on.
Okay, that sounds good.
All right, God bless you guys. John, you're in our prayers continually.
And we'll be working pretty hard on this case. We know it's going to be a little tough to get through this part because they've been in jail 10 years and they don't want to let go of these guys. But we're going to start putting the pressure on shortly. We want to really push another week with the sheriff before we start to really make some phone calls to sheriffs and marshals and start to put the pressure on from a different
point. I picked up on something what Dr. Guy said, and it seems to be significant, which we might want to consider. When they have these guys they don't want to release, they got two places in the country, Terre Haute, Indiana, and Marion, Illinois, which are the SHU, the special housing units, and for terrorists. And they put them in that housing so that they don't have to address the courts, they don't have to do anything, because they don't have any privileges, they strip them of everything because they're terrorists. And it appears that's what they did with Dr. Guy's person, and of course done that with my son. He's in Marion, Illinois, in a terrorist unit with 47 or 48 Muslim terrorists. Now, as a Christian and a guy who loves God and who is a preacher out of the book of Philippians, he says, thank God I'm here to witness to these uncircumcised degenerates and teach them the things of the gospel. But if you don't have that attitude, it can drive you crazy. And they try to do that.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, we'll do the best we can.
You're doing your best, and we appreciate that. God bless you, John. God bless you, Gerard, and we appreciate all you guys are doing. And anything that we can be helpful in that we can do, it's on the table. We'll do it.
Appreciate that. And I do believe we're going to be successful in this and other cases. It's just a matter of time and pressure.
Well,
and
it's exciting.
Yeah,
it truly is exciting. It's the first pinnacle of something that's happened in the last 3 or 4 or 5 years. And needless to say that Kurt and Scott are both on their end doing whatever needs to be done and are available too. Both of them are law school trained. So we're all effectively lawyers, but not bar associated lawyers.
Right. Well, we appreciate that.
Yeah.
Anything else?
That's it. God bless you, John.
Okay, thanks a lot, Fred. All right, Gerard, once you take over, I'll stay in the background. Both of my mics are down. I'm just on a regular wire headset now, but I'm going to kick back and listen and maybe pipe in from time to time. Okay?
Yep.
Right.
Okay. New York, William, you're up next. Let me see. I don't think it went. New York, William. Let me try that again. There you go,
this
William.
This is Bill Radley. Radley?
There you go. Yeah.
Okay. That's some good news. I'm getting into Genesee County and Livingston County. The scope meeting in Genesee County is very active, and I've got a rapport with them. In Livingston, I'm getting into some of the churches, and people in them are very interested. So I do need a little help probably from Monroe County, and who's active there is a coordinator or something of that nature in Monroe County.
You have to make sure you get we'll make some phone calls to those different coordinators out there, and even in the neighboring counties if there's not enough people.
Well, that's it.
Monroe is kind of out there. I don't know if there's a lot of people. That's like, where's that? Like central New York, isn't it?
That's Rochester.
Oh, Rochester, yeah. So you're on the other end from where we are. Well, we got some good people out there, you know?
Even if it's Erie County or Niagara, just give me a phone number and a person, or just a person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's some people. We'll have to make some phone calls and see who we can find, you know, get a hold of. What county are you in now?
I'm in Livingston.
Okay, you're in Livingston. All right. I don't know who your county
I'm directly south of Monroe. Corey was involved some bit, and he hasn't been too much of late. William, I took and made a phone call to, and I don't know exactly what he's doing. I haven't gotten anything back. Of course, is the boxer's fault. So whatever the case is there. I don't have a mailbox set up, but I do have email. And, of course, text messaging works very well for me. So
okay, very good. Well, keep in contact and make sure you know your district coordinators and your county coordinators know what's going on. And I know there's a couple people out in Erie that we can call. Maybe I'll do that for you and have and put them in touch with you. You know, don't get stymied because there's enough people close enough that can do something. Especially, you know, you bring them over and let them come into the site and let them come to the Monday meetings, those people, and get an active group. You know, we need as many people as we can get, and we need four administrators per county. So there's plenty of room for growth. And look at if you got a group that's animated and they want to go, you know, we're going to take them in. I mean, if people are just there sitting there doing nothing, they'll be, you know, they're going to get passed over because the guys that get in and are the movers and shakers are the guys that are going to make this movement go. So, got new blood there. So,
well, both counties are wide open.
Yeah.
And there are people here that are not happy with the way things are going and are willing to step up. And all I've got to do is get them to the site, get them to the information, and I'm learning myself. I mean, I've been studying for a month,
right?
And I'm running into trouble with the civics course, but that's because of cookies or something of that nature,
right?
Not because they can't learn. And then so I've got to get a hold of Kathleen and get that straightened out. I'm listening to the back past weekly calls and this weekly call and reading the other stuff that I'm finding on the website and getting an education as much as possible. And I've got two people that I need to help. One's lost his pistol permit because of DWI. Another's facing what he thinks is a jail term in a DC Prius court. He's got a lawyer and he's teetering on, Billy, you sound like you know something, but I don't know if I should go that way or not. And his lawyer's playing the game of, well, maybe.
Yeah, they never look at it's who you know and how much money you have. You know, if the lawyer's connected and you have enough money to afford his connection, then you'll have results because they'll just bury it. And they got plenty of ways they can bury these things if you have money. You know what I mean?
Sure.
They always plead them down to something and they bury it. And then they seal the case so nobody else can see it. And that's just, you know, they like the backroom deal. They don't want to go to court.
Right.
So that's the way they operate. So, you know, look, if you got people facing jail or anything like that, have them join and have them start the process. Because that's the triage we're doing, you know, that people that are facing jail, we're trying to get them first, you know. And unfortunately, a lot of these stupid little local things lead to jail.
Yep.
You know, I mean, obviously they're making money on it or they wouldn't be doing it. You know?
Well, the trouble that one guy has is they've convicted him. And because of that, they've taken away his pistol permit. And he needs his pistol permit to do his job at work.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
They have really screwed him over.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of that going on. He's not the only story I've heard like that.
I believe it. So it's a case of me getting as much education to be as much help as possible.
Right, and have him come on and have him start educating himself because, look, when you do these cases in these courts, we don't use attorneys, and you have to be somewhat knowledgeable about what you're doing. You don't want to argue your case in court, but you know, you want to be able to conduct yourself and you want to be able to talk intelligently when the subject comes up because they will try you. That's one of the tricks they do now to see if you know what you're doing. And if there's one thing they fear, it's a guy that can conduct himself in court. And of course we have all the court watches and all the other stuff that you should making yourself facilitate to get a hold of that and use that because that's very powerful too. So we appreciate you beating the trees and the and the pads out there, and turn these guys on to us and send them over. And
most definitely.
All right. So
I mean, Sunday I turned over three people. And on top of that, the few days before, I've turned more. I went to a picnic, turned on five.
Right. And like I said, I know a few people out there. I'll send them your way. All right?
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, William.
You have a good day.
Thank you very much. You too.
Yep.
Okay. Yep. The next question is going to it looks like it, I don't know why it jumped over Mr. Black. Hang on. It looks like California Dave is open. I don't know how that happened.
Thank you, Gerard.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay,
is this
so
Dave?
Yeah, a couple weeks
Who
ago.
Who do I have, Dave?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, a couple weeks ago we had a really nice talk. District 13 had a special Thursday morning call with John. We talked about the sheriff and what we're doing to follow up and how, you know, we've already received a wonderful set of papers that the sheriff should have received. And there was a time where people kind of had the misconception, and they were coming to me and saying, you know, when is the national NLA going to follow up with the sheriffs? And John very astutely guided us in District 13 to say, hey, the power is now back with you guys to follow up. We've sent out the papers, and you guys in the counties, and this goes, of course, for the whole country, not just District 13, but John astutely guided us to say, it's your time, people in the counties, to go to your local sheriff or even sheriffs that might be somewhere else in another state that have popped their head up and become visible for what they did in standing up for the people, and to follow up with these sheriffs and basically talk to them, say, hey, have you got these papers from NLA? Have you read them? Do you understand them? Do you have any questions or comments? Of course you do. We want to introduce you to John Durash and a couple of his partners back east. Get these sheriffs on the phone with you guys so you guys can have a meeting of the mind, and then you guys and the sheriff can say, okay, let's book a date for an armed escort of these administrators back into the court, and then we alert the media, et cetera, et cetera. So if there's anything you can elaborate on that to share with the people on the call here as to how we can effectively follow up on the sheriff right away at a local level without waiting for any more papers or action from the national team. Go ahead.
Well, look at these two papers that were just made today that are going out are very powerful. And so even though we might have faxed them in, people should carry them in. You know, it's everybody in the county that can should be having a dialogue with their sheriff. It's very important. Now, don't forget, the sheriff is a political animal. His constituents are in the county that he's elected in. So it's very, very important to have people in his county coming out on NLA's side, because this is like, you know, the sheriff will do as much as he can as long as the people's heads are sticking up. We've been playing this whack-a-mole game for years. You know, the sheriff's afraid to stick their head out because the prosecutor's going to bang it down, and the people are afraid to stick their head out. But listen, the sheriff's out there looking for the people, and when he sees them, he's going to do the right thing because he understands that he has people behind him. It's a symbiotic relationship. So I think it's very important to talk to your sheriff. And you have to have a group of people in that county that are willing to, you know, go in and have a dialogue with him, make sure he's read the papers. Because the other thing that we're planning and we're hoping for is, look at the neighboring counties. One sheriff will convince another sheriff. They will talk. Their sheriff talk together. You know, it's different than just a layperson going in or whatever you want to call somebody. Somebody that's in law enforcement, that's a sheriff already, is going to respect the opinion. You know, one of the things a lot of, you know, that goes on in the courts is everybody's deferring to the attorneys. Even the judges, they don't want to talk to us. They're sticking the attorneys out front. Nobody's making the right decision. Nobody's upholding their oath of office. We have to break that cycle. You know, and one of the things is look, you don't want to send your sheriff up the hill with his sword out, and when he turns around, there's nobody behind him. That's very important to have people. And, I mean, it could be people in the neighboring counties. That's kind of powerful, too. You know, but, you know, if you got people that are coming three or four states away, that's not enough support for him to keep his office. You know what I mean? They're too far away to really support him and keep him out of trouble. You need the local people and the local counties to get together. So one of our things is we want one of these sheriffs to introduce us to the other sheriffs, maybe get us into the, you know, their, bring us up at their sheriff's association meeting. You know, things are becoming very much easier to understand. You know, the paperwork is like, you know, it's not that difficult. And if they read it, they should get it. And here's the deal. You know, the sheriff, when these papers come in and he doesn't act on them, you know, he's in danger of committing felony rescue himself. He has to understand. And that's one of the things that I mean, and I don't want to threaten the sheriffs, but the people have to hold their official's feet to the fire. He's got an oath of office he needs to uphold, and the only ones that are going to make sure that he does that is the people, and it needs to be the local people. And you know, look, at we have a lot of oath keepers who are, you know, generally, you know, retired officials. They should be running for sheriff. If you don't have a constitutional sheriff, you don't have a sheriff that really wants to do it, or he's very progressive. Change him out. Get somebody to run. Look at how great would it be to have a common law sheriff to run that says, you know, if there's no injured party, there's no crime, and that's the way I'm running my office. Oh my goodness, can you imagine that? That would be a wonderful campaign platform. You know, all the common law stuff as a campaign platform, I don't know. I think people are so fed up that they would just go for it. Look, everybody loves Donald Trump. Why? Because he says things that the stupid politicians are afraid to say. I mean, and I don't have a lot of faith in him because that's all he has. He doesn't have the substance, I believe. I mean, he does say things that everybody else is afraid to say, but, you know, my view is he's too corporate, and that's part of the problem with this country is we've corporatized it. And to pick a corporate man to put his face on America, I got a little bit of a problem with that. We have to have somebody come up who speak in common law and justice and honor and mercy. Look, we should be apologizing to the world for allowing these people that have taken our government to ruin the money system that they depend on, because the world runs on an American dollar. And we should have a president that's out there promising to restore that. And to get back to those values, the whole world would support us, you know? So that's how this thing has to run. It has to run from the counties up. The federal government's not going to fix this country. It's going to be the people. And it's going to come out of the counties, and it's going to work up to the federal. And then hopefully it goes like dominoes through the whole world, because we have lots of other countries that want to come in because it's an easy message. It's a no-brainer. It's common sense. Common law is common sense, and they get it. So all we got to do is get it out there. And so the sheriffs, everybody should be talking to the sheriff. And who's ever in those counties, he needs to see some of his constituents, and they need to see him on a semi-regular basis. You know, try to make the functions that he goes to. These guys are political animals. They go to certain dinners. And don't forget, you know, they run with the prosecutor. They run with the judges because they're all elected on just about the same cycles. So they all know each other. So this sheriff has a dialogue with all the people that are making your life miserable. He knows them, and he runs when he runs for office, he runs with them, maybe even on the same ticket. So that's what he's up against. He has to put them back into the box, and they're telling him, well, you know, if you want the party support, you got to do this. So he has pressure on him. The people have to put more pressure on the sheriff than the party can put on him. And look at there's only one thing the party's afraid of. I know we took them to court. They don't care about anything. The only thing they care about is people. And that's the only thing judges care about more than the party, is when they get 50 people or 75 people or 100 people in a courtroom, they fear that more than they fear the party. Believe me, I don't want to belabor the point. You kind of get the idea here. So that's what people should be doing. Anything we release like that, you don't need to ask us to take it to the sheriff. The only thing is if the sheriff is going to, you know, if it looks like there's something going on where a sheriff needs to go after a judge or anything like that, that's something that we want to coordinate nationally with National Liberty Alliance. I wouldn't want them to go out and do it without having the full force of National Liberty Alliance throughout the country. That's part of our power. is the fact that we're shining a light, and it's a national light. So don't forget that. So, you know, if you have an issue and it's getting down to the point where the sheriff has to escort the jury in or he has to arrest somebody, you want to make sure that National Liberty Alliance, the administration, knows, and that we prepare and we get the whole force of everybody on it. That we all know that it's going down when it goes down. Look, we don't want to do anything in the dark either. You know, our friend is the light, so we want to do everything, you know, in the light when the time comes. Okay?
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing we're sharing with people in District 13 is if you're an individual, you know, man or woman, it's great to approach sheriff as a group, but there's nothing wrong with an individual man or woman calling up the sheriff to ask if they've seen these papers and other such follow-up questions. And what we're finding is we're hearing stories that sheriffs are feeling like they have some sort of contractual obligation to do what the judge or the prosecutor says. So what we're trying to do is to help to educate the sheriffs that these contracts are unconscionable and voidable and void ab initio because of their superior duty to the Constitution, and we want to coordinate with NLA to help these sheriffs sever these unconscionable contracts and free them from this false feeling like they have to.
It's
do
a
what
false
the judge
premise.
Prosecutor said.
Absolutely, because they've spent years trying to convince the sheriff that he's nothing more than a paper boy for the courts, and this is what you're up against. You know, I mean, the sheriffs think that they don't have subpoena power. They don't. Look at all our paperwork is laying that to bed. When they read our paperwork, it will empower them. And we don't need what's going to happen. It's going to take a handful of sheriffs to realize the power, step up to the plate, and that's when you'll see the rest of them fall into line. Because look at it's going to be a breath of fresh air for those sheriffs when they finally get put back in their with their rightful authority. You know, when they finally realize how powerful they are and they start exercising that, it's gonna be a good day for a sheriff, you know? So, and yes, you could go talk to them. It's important because, you know, some people have a personality. The sheriff, you know, you might know him in a certain way, and it's fine to go in and talk to him alone and get his ideas on things, you know? I mean, that's how you know whether or not you need another guy, if you should put another guy up there, you know? But you see how he is in front of a group of people and then see how he is one-to-one, you know? I mean, I had a problem. We called our sheriff up, and the thing that impressed me was the next day he met me at the guy's house. We called him about a problem when they wanted to do mandatory vaccinations, and they said they were going to send a healthcare worker out with two state troopers. And we called him up to talk about it, and he was in our house the next day, and he said, I'm not gonna enforce any unconstitutional orders. I said, well, I want to know where you stand, because I'm telling you right now, that's my line in the sand, and they're not coming in this house, and you know, you full well know that I'm a Second Amendment guy, and that I will defend myself and my family if I have to, and I'm going to be calling you. And I would expect you to come in and chase them off my property. So, you know, it's important to have that dialogue with them, you know. So that's powerful anyway. Okay, anything else?
Yeah, and the last thing I'll share is occasionally someone from District 13 will come to me and say, I'm a little nervous about approaching the sheriff by myself. And what we share with them is, for all you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 people from NLA may have already approached the sheriff, and you're just going to be reconfirming what he's already heard 2, 3, or 4 times. So we're encouraging people, don't worry about if you're approaching them by yourself, because you may be the 4th, 5th, or 6th person that's reached out to them on this topic. So with that, I'll yield and appreciate it.
Thank you very much. And you're absolutely right. And the thing about approaching them by yourself is you might have better access than trying to do it with a group of people, because when he's going to sit in front of a group of people, now you got to make a schedule. You got to make a time when everybody can be there, and he feels more like he needs to be prepared for the subject matter. Whereas if you just wander into his office on a day when you know he's there and knock on the door, a lot of times those go off better than making him nervous, saying, "I got 5 people want to grill you, Sheriff." You know what I mean? Just go in and be friendly. Anyway, we're going to go move to the next guy. Thank you very much. And I don't know who's going to go here. I don't know if it's going to be Gary from Michigan or Mr. Black, who's above him, but I'm going to hit next question and see what happens. Okay, Mr. Black, it looks like you're back in the order.
How you doing? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. I guess my question would be, how will one get the sheriff if you want to file a complaint against rogue police officers like in a county? What would be the process for that? Because sometimes, I don't know, it's like there's a shield of blue where, you know, they don't want to do their job. But
I'll tell you what, if you're filing police reports against other agencies or whatever, you know, most of the time you're going to run into trouble because they don't like that. Nobody likes that. You know what I mean? They do have that blue wall. And what they're going to tell you, and it's the same thing that we used to run into in the courts, they'll say, well, did you go through the due process? Did you exhaust all of your, you know, your, what do they call it?
Bitter remedy.
Your remedies, right. Now, the remedy with them is they want to do an internal investigation. However, I would say, and I've done this myself, I don't mind getting a hold of that officer's superior and complain to him. Look, I know they're corporate police forces and I know all that baloney, but nevertheless, I have a business. And if I have an employee that does something, I want to know. And so if the people come to me, I can fix it. So I always figure it's my duty to get that guy, whoever that barracks commanders or whatever they may be, the chief of police or whatever, and put the complaint before him, because really the buck stops with him. So, you know, if he's got a guy who's an officer or a sergeant or whatever that's doing some bad stuff, you need to tell him. You know, you need to give him the chance to fix it. You know, and a lot of people say, well, I'm afraid because if I complain, then they'll target me. And I always say, no, no, no. I say, when I complain about somebody doing something wrong, I just beg them to do something, because then I'll really go after them and say they're targeting me. You know, I mean, you have to be loud. You have to be noisy. You can't be intimidated. You have to speak with authority, and you have to speak as one of the people. So look, if it's real bad, you're going to have to get a sheriff. Like if there's actual crimes going on, usually they got the support of their buddies, and that complaint that you make to that particular office probably won't go anywhere. You know, I mean, if they're smart, they'll try to fix it, because if they're running a scam, they won't want to draw attention to themselves. So sometimes things get better when you complain to the upper guy. He goes and says, cut it out, guys. We got more important things that we're doing, you know. In other words, they're breaking bigger laws than you. So I would complain to in that office first, and let them see what happens there. And then, I mean, based on that, look at when you go to a sheriff and you swear out a sworn affidavit, he's basically bound to pursue it. That's part of your due process. And if he doesn't, then he's doing felony rescue for that particular thing. You know, I mean, if you got a police officer that drags you out of the car and beats the crap out of you for no reason, you know what I mean? And then you go and you make charges. Somebody has to hold his feet to the fire. And if you make a sworn affidavit and a complaint, and they don't pursue that, that's felony rescue. So that's felony rescue. In other words, if you tell a law enforcement official, you make him aware that another official is breaking the law and he doesn't do anything, look, that he's guilty by omission. In other words, that guy committed a felony and he's rescuing him from prosecution by not arresting him, by not pursuing it. So you see, when you speak with those terms, then they get a little scared, because they know that you know how to pursue the process. And, you know, I mean, it depends on how corrupt they are. I mean, look, I don't know what the incidence is or anything else that you're talking about, you know.
The usual, you know, police brutality, you know, false unlawful arrest without a warrant, you know, the usual.
Right,
you know? So,
right.
Like, if you know, whenever I do correspond with these people, I basically, you know, when I say, you know, and I'll make, you know, in the conversation I'll bring it up, And the first thing I'll say, well, you know, the statute says, you know, and I just go right into the Constitution. I just go right into, you know, they're oath takers under Article 3, and they're bound by it. This is what they're, you know, they're bound by it. This is what they have to do. Article 6, they have to
educate them, because they don't believe that. They don't understand it, and they don't believe it. And even when you take them, even when you sue them, which if you've got a case going, you should be suing them, you know, at the same time, you should be suing that particular officer, and maybe even suing the judge when he doesn't do the right thing. And that's a strategy that you would do. You would take them all to court, and you bring it to a higher court, because they can't rule on themselves. That's a violation of your inalienable rights. That's why we do habeas corpuses. And if it's that serious, I would take it in. I would take it to the IRC team and fill out a habeas corpus. That's probably the quickest way to get out of this stuff, because it's like Bill Thornton says, do you want to fight or do you want to win? You have to hit them where it hurts. You got to give them that solar plexus punch, you know?
Well, the thing is, you say the habeas corpus process, that start on the state level or the federal level?
Well, we file them through the grand jury on the federal level. It has to be done on a federal level because it's a state issue, and the state cannot fix the state. Once the state violates your inalienable rights, they got no business ruling on themselves. You know what I mean?
I understand that.
What are they going to do? Spank themselves? Bad state. Bad. Yeah, let me know how that works out for you. No, it has to go into the higher court, and they never answer it. They always default on it. So then basically it becomes a violation of the default order, which comes out of the federal court. So it is a contempt of a federal order once you get a federal default on them not answering that habeas corpus. So if it's serious and they're arresting you or anything like that, I would just jump to the habeas corpus business, you know? I mean, if it's just something where they pull you over and you're not facing charges or whatever like that, then I would go make an official complaint with the superior officer. And a lot of times you can head stuff off if they haven't really done a lot yet. But, you know, the minute they're putting handcuffs on you and arresting you, guess what? It all bets are off. You know, that's a serious thing. You can go to jail, you know.
Well, how long is it usually once you file for that habeas corpus? I mean, once you go to, I think it's IRC, what you said, you get all the documentation there. How long does that usually take for them to, you know, the habeas corpus drawn up?
And well, you know, I don't know what we have in the queue right now. I don't know where you would fall, because we do have a lot of cases going. We're going to get caught up here before too long. But once the paperwork goes in and is written, there's not a lot of wait time, because they got 3 days. You know what I mean? So you're talking a couple of weeks, you know what I mean, before you're completely, you know, they're served and they're defaulted. And you're filing your default in the federal court, and you're giving them their notices of default. You know, in 30 days you're wrapped up basically, and then it's just a matter of, you know, getting that cease and desist order, and doing it like that. But I don't know where you would fall into our system at this point. I mean, we really need more people writing habeas corpuses. But they're not easy. You have to be knowledgeable of common law, and you have to keep your foot out of their stupid corporate stuff. So there's a certain, form for the matter that we put in, and it needs to be followed strictly. And right now we got maybe 3-4 people writing them and even they are still being tested. Once they're done, And they got another 4 people writing them, we're going to start moving faster. But I don't think that, you know, I don't think you're more than 60 days away. I mean, if you want to file it, you know, if it's something that you're, and if it looks like you're going to be heading to jail, that's what you got to tell them, because those are the ones who are kind of putting on the fast track. Look, if you've got time and you can head the thing off and you can fill out some paperwork and just push the court down the road a little while, you know, because a lot of times you could drag these things out for months. I would advise doing that if jail is not imminent. I would just drag them out until we get caught up on our IRC team, and you could check back with us. You know, I mean, you could file it and just let it sit there. But in the meantime, if they're sending you stuff and you got to go to hearings, a lot of times there's certain strategies you can do that will stall them. So you could talk to an intake specialist about that.
Is there any audios on the complete process as far as
I'll tell you, it's
recordings or archives.
You kind of need to be mentored into it, but yes, we have the habeas corpuses that we file with NLA, and if you're part of NLA and you're signed up, there's an audio actually that talks you through the parts of the habeas corpus, which you everybody should do that. You should get to know what these things are, even if you're not going to file your own. You know,
but also, is there a number for the audio? Because I looked down and there's a whole bunch of like past archives, but is there an audio?
No. You're going to have to go to like court cases and examples. You go to the habeas corpus, and in there you'll see a little thing to click on, and it says audio where John's talking to somebody that called up, and he explains to her, go here, go to law jurisdiction.
Yeah, let me pipe in a little bit on this. We have gotten to the point we've got people who get access to the audio and all of the information as they come through part of the process. One of the things we discovered is that people will come and take our paperwork and then bastardize it, and some of it will look like us. They may not even remove some of the things that they need to remove from there if they're not going to come through us to have the habeas corpus done, and it's just going to ruin it for us. So we had to keep it in-house. People have to come into the you have to sign up on the IRC. Once you sign up on the IRC, you'll get into the queue with because each person that we're training right now, we're training five or six people. They're eventually going to be training five people, and then they're going to be training five people. So you see, it'll grow exponentially. But the process and all of the lessons, we've got about four or five audios that we've really covered a lot of information on habeas corpus. And habeas corpus is the most difficult paper to write, so there's a lot to it. There's the petition, then there's the habeas corpus itself, then there's the default, and then there's the memorandum of decision. So there are four papers involved with it, and they have to be applied at different times. And then, of course, there is also the sworn affidavits that are attached to it. But we... in order to get into the process, you have to be a real person with an actual email that's working. And, of course, you can't be a member without an email that works because, they send you an email and you have to respond in order to become a member. That's automatic in our site. But we call the phone numbers that people have given us. And if that phone number is not real, then we're not going to allow those people to come in and participate. We want to know that they're a real person. They're going to take an oath and a vow, and they're not going to abuse the paperwork, and they're not going to change the paperwork, because we work very hard on this paperwork to make sure it says what we want it to say. I mean, we can always get better, and people can come up with ideas, and we can consider the idea and make some changes, and we'll always be making little changes in the paperwork. But we don't want people to water it down. We don't want people to put things like the man on the land and flesh and blood and son of God and all those things that has nothing to do with what we're doing. We're using the process that our founding fathers have used, and it's in common law. It's been here for quite some time, over 1,000 years, and we're going to use that process and that language, and we're going to go in against the fiction, and the fiction is a fraud. We're not going to give it any acknowledgement. We're not going to try to speak in some special language that's code to them to say, oh, they're talking about common law. They're not talking about the fiction. No. If we're coming in on the common law, they're fiction, they're frauds, and they need to go to jail. And eventually a lot of those people, I'm sure, will go to jail once America justice returns back into the courts. And that'll be up to the people how they're going to handle that. But nevertheless, we have to protect our paperwork, and we can't have people just making – we've had people that have left us, taken stuff with them, even the seals, and are using the seal, and they have nothing to do with us. And because they want to do something different, they got their own plan. They came in and robbed what they could. They robbed membership, and then they took off and did stupid things. And some of the things that they're doing are going to get them arrested. But we don't want that to point back to us. So, again, we have to be careful on how we do and what we're doing, and that's what we're doing. So you join the process.
I'm
doing
IRC.
Yeah, join the IRC, make the connection, get known, and they're going to, you know, before you get your membership, they're going to make sure that that you're a real person with a real address and a real phone number and a real email, and that's the beginning of getting access into the group.
Okay, because I'm joined in and everything, but I want to learn how to help people also, like, you know, so I'm in. As far as the donations and everything, I have to just mail my donations in. I don't do the debit card stuff. I don't do the thing as far as the PayPal. I don't do none of that stuff.
Right. Well,
I can just drop it right in the mail. Okay?
All right.
That's fine, and we appreciate it. So the best way to learn is by doing it yourself, you know? So get in there and get signed up. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. We're going to have Gary from Michigan next. So,
hi, Gerard. This is Gary Don, Michigan.
Yeah.
Yeah, a quick question here. What's a deposition got to do with common law? This is a personal thing that happened just recently. I got a summons or what it is to go to a deposition.
Well,
common law, they really can't force a deposition on you, but they will do it in their court. So
they will do it in the court. Okay.
Yeah, and you got to get out of that court.
Huh?
You got to get out of that court.
Yeah. Well, this is somebody else's, but. Can you take the Fifth Amendment for answering?
According to their rules, they're calling it discovery and stuff. And
yeah.
And if you refuse to answer, you know, they'll presume you guilty of whatever it is that they're trying to get you from you. Also, they'll turn around and say, well, you know, I know Thornton speaks about this, and particularly in some of the discovery. And Thornton teaches that you put all your work up front. You know, if you're going in on a fishing trip, you don't belong there to begin with. You should have the affidavits. You know what the person done. You make your affidavits. You make your accusations. You put affidavits of truth. You file all of your paperwork and whatever whatever kind of evidence that you have in documents. And you pull your witnesses together and you put it in all in one shot. Okay, you don't go through the process of just doing a little at a time because they want to drag this out and then they want to go through discovery and all this other stuff. So what Thornton was teaching, that you do it all up front because that's the way common law should be. The other side won't do it that way. So when they want to come in and try to go on a fishing trip and you deny it, often what will happen, especially in contracts and different things of that nature, the judge will rule, okay, you know, if you're not going to give them this information, then you're cut off. You can't add anything more, and you can't go in for discovery on your own. And Thornton teaches, well, that's good. I'm done already. I got everything in there. And that's the way you should do it. I remember I did a case like that, and the lawyer wanted me to have me sanctioned. I mean, I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a bar attorney or anything, and he wants to have me sanctioned.
Yeah.
And he's saying, oh, he put too much information in, and he can't do that much, and he's got to do it. I mean, the guy is insane. You know, I don't know what school. Mm-hmm. Well, he went to a bar school. That's what happened.
Yeah.
So you will get the other side complain when you pile in all that evidence and stuff because it's overwhelming to them. Look, court cases, generally speaking, are cut and dry. I mean, look at if the person done something wrong, and you got the affidavit and you got the proof on it because you should, they're going to get found and ruled against, and that's the way it's going to happen. But unfortunately, they're not interested in justice. They're interested in really, you know, settling for the corporations and for lawyers, and that's that. So you don't get justice in courts, and it just doesn't happen.
I agree with that. Thank you on that, John.
Yeah, to common law, though, they're not going. Yeah. People are not going to go in with frivolous cases. They're just not going to do it.
What were those two numbers for the IRS that you said to have the forms for?
56 form IRS form 56. You can Google it. It's on the sheriff's page.
156 or 56?
No, 56, and the other one is 4490.
44.
And if you go back to the sheriff's page, go all the way to the bottom, the documents are there. You can download them there. Or you Google them, IRS Forms 56, IRS Form 4490. You'll get them there, too.
Yeah, I don't see good enough to do it. But the other form is 56, right?
56 and 4490.
49. Now, and this Dave Henson, I've known him for years, and he's done a hell of a good job. You know, he's from Idaho there. and you probably know what business he has also. Right, probably. I won't bring it up in the air.
Right.
But whatever he can do, if there's any call-ins that I can do to have him call me, and I'll be happy to call. I can do that very, very much, and I can spend time on the phone as much as 4 hours a day. So I call the judges and chaplains and all the different people in his case, okay?
All right, we appreciate it. And whatever time you can put in to help, you know, others and to help National Liberty Alliance, you know, reach their goal, I mean, we the people have to do it together.
Well, we're working on that. We're working on that and working with Gary Jolly on that.
Okay, great.
Okay, thank you very much.
Bye. Thanks a lot. Yep, thanks, Gary.
Yep, we've got quite a few people in the quay here. We need to move along.
Okay, we got Don, you're unmuted. It says VIP dialer Don. Are you there, Don?
Yeah, it's probably not Don. It just he's coming in on a dialer. That name is showing up.
All right. So it's a VIP dialer.
Yeah, they're probably coming in off the browser.
Yeah, I can hear their radio or something in the background.
Yeah, they should have heard that they were. Let me, you know what we'll do is we'll mute them. They should hear you've been muted. And then we will unmute them. I don't see the button going back, but let me try that over here. Okay, they're muted.
Yeah.
And now they're unmuted. So they should have heard that. If they're not paying attention, you're going to have to move on.
Okay. Anybody there? Going once? Twice? Okay, we're going to go to Connecticut Ed. I'm going to unmute you. Don, you're going to have to wake up and dial back in or something. Okay. Ed, you are unmuted. Connecticut Ed. 0445 number. Connecticut Ed. Where are you? Car, Connecticut Ed. Hang on a minute here. Connecticut Ed. Okay, Ed, you're unmuted. I'm going to move to the next caller here in a second. Connecticut Ed, I don't hear anything. All right, I'm going to go to Mark. Mark, with 8215, you're unmuted.
Hello?
Yes.
Yes, hi. Is this Gerard?
Yes, it is. How you doing, Mark?
Okay, Gerard?
Yes.
I'm Doug Millar. And I, you know, I had invited you and John Durash for my show last Friday night, but I couldn't reach him. I tried several times to call him, so I couldn't reach him. I had to go ahead and have another show, but I'd like to invite you both on my show this Friday so we can spread the word more, and also I'd invite you to, when's a good time for me to call John? It's so hard to get him, and I'd like to have a firm time. And
yeah, and
so
you gotta give us the call-in number too, because I got some kind of number, and I tried, but it wasn't the right number, you know, because, I was kind of waiting for your call because that's how we usually do it. You know, I have you call in on my Skype. John uses that 845-233 number. I think it's 6560, if I'm not mistaken. That's the number you should try to get him on during the week and work the details out of the Friday call. Now, what time of the day would you do that?
It would be 9 o'clock your time. I'm sorry, it'd be 9 o'clock your time for 1 hour.
Okay, 9 p.m.?
Yes, Eastern time.
Okay, 9 p.m. Eastern time. And what's the name of the show again?
I listened to you.
I heard you. You did pretty good covering up, let me tell you. You didn't skip a beat. I got to give you that. You know?
Thank you.
It was pretty good. And you sound a lot like this other guy that we go on to, Roger Landry. He's a talker, and he goes right from one subject to the next, and you're very similar to him. So it looks, you know, it sounded like a good show. So 9 o'clock, make sure you remind us, get a hold of John on that 233 number, and you can call. You can also call me. Now, you should have my Skype number. I don't know if you do.
Well, I've got a number for you. I've called you before and talked to you. I got a number.
Yeah,
for
but I don't.
Best.
Did you call me on that? Did you call me on my Skype number? That's the number that I would do the show on usually.
Yeah, we were on his show, I think, 3 weeks ago, weren't we, Doug?
Yeah,
three weeks or a month ago. So yeah,
right.
He does it on Friday nights at 9 p.m. I think, is it Crusade Radio? Is that what you have?
Exactly.
Okay.
No, I did try to get in, and I did hear him because the number I had brought me into the show, but I couldn't get in. I was just like a person listening.
Yeah, one of the problems I have is I promised my wife Friday nights, and I've been doing that now for a couple of months. Although last time I took away to come on your show, I mean, I don't mind occasionally coming on again. I don't know that I can come on this Friday, but if Gerard wants to come on this Friday, he can do as well as I can. And maybe in a couple of weeks, you know, you can get me again. I'll work something out. My wife will take Saturday off instead of Friday night, you know, because usually Friday night, 5 o'clock, that's it. I shut everything down, and I spend the evening with my wife.
Well, listeners, John, if these are new people, we kind of got to introduce them to the breadcrumb trail. So, you know,
exactly.
You got to get them used to what our message is. And that's very easy to do in the beginning. And, yeah, Friday nights could be rough, but I'm willing to do it this Friday night. I mean, how long is the program?
He's 1 hour.
1 hour.
Yeah, well, 1 hour is not bad. Yeah, so 9 to 10. I would do it if you want. And I know, so we were already on once. And I would just, you know, when we start a series like this, we always try to recap in the beginning of the show because people forget. Some people are hearing for the first time. So I kind of know what to do, you know, to get your listeners up to speed. And you're going to have to get them up to speed. And
right,
of course,
Gerard, I've got the 518 number.
You should email me your number so I have it. I had a number that I couldn't get into the board anyway. I don't know. I was able to get in and listen to you, but I couldn't get in where you knew I was there.
Huh. Well, actually, when you're calling a crowd, I'm sorry, you're calling.
I think it was a talk show, wasn't it?
No, it's actually a conference call, free conference call pro, and it's a 1-8 number. And so when you go in there, you automatically. You have access code
1776
pound.
And then you'll know.
Why don't you email to Gerard at gerard@nationallibertyalliance.org. Email him the info. If I can make it this Friday, I will. I don't think I'd be able to, but in a couple of weeks, you know, I could probably do something. But anyway, email him the number and the code or whatever he has to do, and we'll take it from there.
So I'm going to – I don't want to drag this out so I'll get in touch with you. Email me the stuff, and then I'll touch base with you before Friday, maybe Thursday.
Right.
Night.
Yeah. Email him also a number to get a hold of you directly. Yeah.
Right. Right.
Remember also, okay. And also remember, I mentioned last week that we have this crowdfunding project that there's no fees charged by the company, the organization, and it's We Share.
I think crowdfunding. I'll have to look into that a little more. We did look a little bit into that, and I think I think that was one of the ones we were going to go with a while back. But what happened, if I recall, and it could be a different one though, one of them wouldn't take us on because they said we were political, and we told them we have nothing to do with politics, but they wouldn't let us come in anyway.
I
don't know whether it was that one or another one. There's quite a few of them out there. So.
But we actually did one, and we made some money with it. It didn't do as good as we thought, but it did make some money. I mean, it was okay, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it paid for the things we were looking to make money for, so
right.
This is really great. We share crowdfunding.
And I've seen that. I'm familiar with WeShare because I think we did look at it.
Then you do a / Unite for Justice. And so, what's a good time for me to call you? Remember, I missed you last week. I tried a bunch of times. And is it tomorrow a good time to call you? Is it better to call you on...
what's tomorrow, Tuesday?
Wednesday or... Yes, tomorrow's Tuesday.
Yeah, look, I work during the day, and I catch the phone when I can. I mean, it's a hit and miss, just like it is with John. But if you dial that... I'm on my computer a lot, so that number that I'm going to give you, you know, it will ring on Skype and then it'll roll to my cell. But send me at Gerard@nationallibertyalliance.org. Send me all the information to get in.
Oh, dot org, okay.
Yeah, dot org. And then
okay.
Once I get that, then what I'll do is I'll call you closer to Friday. I mean, there's no, probably like Thursday.
Sure.
And we'll touch base, okay?
Well, yeah, right. All I get for you is a 518 number. Should I get another number now, or are you going to call me?
Well, why don't you email me the number? I can give you my Skype number is 518-291-9941. And if I know you're going
to... that's the one I got for you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, John, what's a good time for me to call you regarding the crowdfunding?
I'm going to have to just try him. He's on during the day.
I'm a hit and miss. Sometimes it's real hard. Sometimes I'm just so bogged down in conference calls, and then when I try to get some writing going, I try to ignore everything that's coming in unless it's one of the leaders that need to be talking, you know, on some kind of a project or something. But it's just difficult. But you can always get me through Gerard. Gerard's always talking with me all the time, and so if whatever you tell him will get to me, you know.
Right. As a matter of fact, send me the URL for that we fund, and I'll go back and look at it again, and then I'll
okay, we'll do.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I want to move forward because we're getting late. We got a lot of people in the queue. And thank you for calling.
Okay. Bye.
Yep. Okay. Bye. Bye. Okay. Unknown. The unknown number. 2177 are the last four. Let's see. It's just a number with 96566. You've been unmuted.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi, Jeremy.
Yes. Who's calling?
My name is Jeremy. Howdy.
Okay. Jerry, very good. Some people call me Jerry, so I thought you were talking to me.
Right.
Okay, no, okay.
Well, actually, I'm glad I actually got through. I've been trying to get through in a couple other different meetings. I've actually been a member of the NLA since June 7th,
okay.
I do believe. I've completed the civics course. I've worked on, a few of the, writing tasks. I've worked on my own habeas corpus. And I've actually sent in, everything that's needed as far as the vows and everything that I've worked on for that habeas corpus. And so my question was where do I go from here? You know, I'm ready to keep going with things, especially with writing, and, I've signed up to be an administrator.
You can go to the committee and you can put in that you want to be part of that team.
Yes,
all
and
right.
I've actually signed up for the IRC,
yeah.
The Courtroom Observers Committee, and the what I like to call CLAC,
right.
The Common Law Advisor Committee.
Well, it sounds like you're doing it. Nobody's called you for writing yet. I don't, but that's going to come real quick because you know, like John says, we got like five or six people we're training, and then they're going to train five or six people once they're done. So it's just a matter of getting through the first six people, and then, you know, they're going to call the other ones. And so it sounds like you're doing, John was also talking about putting another course up for administrators to take. I don't know how we're coming with that, an additional education, which is,
yeah, there are two
good.
More, there are two more courses we're going to be putting together. One of them is going to be on the Constitution, but we haven't hammered that out yet. You know, we need to get a couple of days of just focus in on that course to put it together, and we could probably put it together in a couple of days. But the thing is we got to get, you know, time to focus in and do that. But we'll do that as soon as we can. But we're also working on some other kind of a course, which really helps people in speaking and organizing and filing and that kind of stuff, because they're going to need those skills. Even though, you know, you'll need a secretary anyway, you know, all four administrators, anybody who's going to become an administrator in the counties, there'll be four of them, and then they'll have a secretary that'll be hired also to take care of most of the paperwork and the filing and the different things. But skills are necessary, you know, having meetings and doing different things to be able to speak and so on.
Yeah, absolutely. Any skills that I could you know, further develop would be great, especially in speaking. You know, I'm fairly young, and I don't have a lot of experience in that sort of things, but I would like to. You know, I'm 25 years old, and I got nothing but time on my hands right now. I've given up on pretty much everything else. You know, I'm focusing 100% of my time that I can, you know, having a family, on the NLA. So, you know, like I said, anything that I can do to even help, you know, get things set up, I got time. I don't have a job right now. I'm looking at actually accomplishing our endeavors here.
Well, that's very good. And there's certainly plenty of things you can do. And as far as the committees go, if you want to sign up into some of those committees, and there's certainly a lot of continuing education. The civics course is just a basic thing, you know, basic course to get you primered up.
Right.
You know, we have stuff like Common Law by Brent Winters.
Yeah. Well, and I went through most of the archive and downloaded and listened to, you know, just about everything I could find.
Right.
Did you go through
the Thornton ones, the 3 hours of Thornton's Common Law?
Yep.
That's
and
very
those are
important.
Very good.
Important.
Yeah. Very, very important. The part that I was having trouble with specifically with that particular area of information is the audio is, and it's easy enough to follow and I can understand it, but it's hard to fully grasp the abilities that come with that knowledge. You know, to be able to read those kinds of papers and fully be able to do the things that you understand.
Right, right. Well, listen, Bill Thornton was one of the ones that originally was I could say was our mentor originally as far as common law goes.
Yep.
And you know, so we got a lot of his stuff, and then we went even beyond where his understanding was, you know, and that's what you hope happens, that the student surpasses the teacher, so to speak, you know.
Right.
And of course we spent a lot of time on his site, which was 1215.org. And that helped us write some of the papers because he laid out some stuff, you know, and I dare say we even improved upon the paperwork that he put in. We've modified it and made it even better. So,
right.
You know, as long as you're studying all that, that's pretty good. You know, you want to, where are you at now?
I'm out of Wisconsin.
Uh-huh.
Dunn County and Pepin and Pierce County are the three counties that I kind of figured, you know, I ought to be able to do work in.
Right.
You know,
well, that's
I'm talking
to
a lot of
too.
Different people about all of this kind of stuff, too, you know,
right.
Trying to get everybody aware of these things. You know, I've got a couple of family members that are interested, and they've also joined the NLA. And,
yeah, try to
you know,
build
we are growing, for sure.
Try to build your county up. And look, that's where you're going to get your speaking abilities because you're going to, you know, you can get together with those people. You can have your district meetings.
And 4 minutes.
And that's good practice. Get them together, you know, I don't do too many meetings like we used to. I used to go out. We actually used to pull counties together. But you know what? We have to do that now. We have to go out and actually physically recruit people in our counties, you know, when, because when we're successful, we're going to have a tsunami, and we're going to need all these people in these counties. We're going to need these administrators. So we need to be getting out and getting the word out and recruiting people. And that's your study group too. Those people, you can talk to them and you can, you know, and work on different stuff, you know, and plus the committees, there's other stuff you can do in the committees too. But, you know, it sounds like that you're probably going to be good for writing, because it sounds like you're intelligent enough that you're going to be able to grasp that. So that, you know, once you get through that process and they call you, that'll keep you pretty busy. But look, you're on a good path, it sounds like to me. You're doing a good job.
Sounds good. Yeah, that's exactly okay. What I was looking for, to get into the writing, because that's something I know I can do very comfortably with that. So yeah. I won't hold up anybody else's time here. Glad I got to talk to you guys.
Don't be afraid to call back in. Jerry from Wisconsin, you said, right?
Yeah, Jeremy.
Oh, Jeremy. Okay, I didn't hear you the first time. Very
good.
Yeah,
that one always gets a little screwy.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you guys very much. God bless.
Okay. Have a good night.
You too.
Yeah, good night. Next caller, you're unmuted, 2177. You got about 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Hey, Gerard, this is Sharon.
Yes.
From Connecticut.
Okay.
I wanted that I heard on a lecture I was listening to on a audio that the reason the state courts cannot get rid of that habeas corpus is because it is an administrative remedy, and they have to have your consent.
Right.
Well, one of the main reasons we go to the federal courts is because it's a federal issue. Anything that comes, and this is in the Constitution, anything that arises under the Constitution has to be taken up in the federal courts. And since they're violating your unalienable right of due process, the jurisdiction, and so on, these are all federal issues. The state cannot decide that. This is a federal issue to be decided because it's concerning your unalienable rights, particularly on the Bill of Rights. So that's the main reason we go into the federal court.
Well, it was just something that was interesting because of it. You know, they have to have your permission to talk about it.
Well, you know, look, they do whatever they want. They say whatever they want. They decide whatever they want. You know,
they
make it up as they go. They don't even obey their own rules. They just do whatever they want. They're totally rogue. And
they're
going to be held accountable for it. It's only a matter of time.
We're coming, and we're going to make them.
Yeah.
People are coming.
Yeah.
All right, you guys. You have a good night.
Thanks for the call.
That brings us to the end. So we appreciate everyone coming, and Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. Now, we will be starting Bible studies. We're planning on doing it this Sunday at 11 a.m. And I'll be talking with Rick. I haven't talked with Rick about this because we're changing our times. I'm going to move from a Saturday to Sunday. And so it'll be 11 a.m. Eastern time. It'll be 1 hour. And then we'll also spend some time with Q&A if people have Q&A. But we're going to be focusing in on the life of Christ. We're going to do the harmony of the gospel. So anybody who really wants to buckle down and really get to know the king of the court, that's what we need to be doing. So we hope the leadership, a lot of our leadership comes and gets lessons on the gospel by going through all four of them together in a harmonious way. And it should be a blessing. So that'll be, again, it'll be held in the same room right here in a Monday night room, but it'll be on Sunday mornings at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can figure that out from your own time zone, from 11 to 12, and then maybe a little time for Q&A. Okay, with that, we'll see you next Monday also. God bless everyone, and good night.
Bye.